Ross Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Okay, something funny is going on here. Oh, I think the boy's been in here. I got next to no levels at all on my production audio channel. And I'm normal on my mic channel. Yeah, John, it is all kinds of screwed up. And I don't know who's done what right off the top of my head. Dear God. Well, this is nice, but... Hey, everybody. No, John, not that I can see. Just a minute here. All right, that's weird. What have you done, Ferg? What have you done? What have you done? What have you done? Nope. Okay. Nothing appears out of... I noticed this last night, but I thought it was anomalous. I was listening to Malloy and couldn't hardly get any audio out of this channel. Oh, this is annoying. This is really, really annoying. No. Nope, that's not it either. Well, shoot, folks. Let me look at that right now. I'm sorry to do this to you. I mean, I had a little opening rant all ready to go, and then everything, as usual, went freaking sideways. something muy strange going on. Yeah, John, Mike is normal. It's that stereo channel that's squirreled. And let's just have a look. Ah, there we go. Hey, just for the fun of it, let's check this again. Hold on. Yeah, okay, I think we're fixing. But God only knows why it got that way. Ugh, what a way to start a show, but at least, at least we're rolling. And we're rolling on this Tuesday, December the 8th. Merciful God. They don't deal with this kind of stuff in the real broadcast world, because the real broadcast world has real broadcast money. But, you know, we're not going to start down that road this evening. No. It was what a day yesterday was. Yeah, the PC is... no, I don't think it's the PC being noisy. I think it's a connection somewhere. It's a bad cord or something, but... let's pull that back and get rid of the noise. Yeah. But anyway, we're cooking. We're here. Sorry for the weird start. I didn't have any intention of having a weird start, but, you know, sometimes these things happen. But it is Tuesday. It's December the 8th, 2009. Yesterday, the 7th of December in Charleston at the headquarters of the West Virginia Department of Environmental Permitting. That's what protection. You're kidding, right? Yeah. No, that's what they call themselves. It was an amazing time. We had a couple of 300 people there, and the coal thugs were kept at bay and at a distance. I have sent the audio over to Ben Birch, who will be getting it posted if he hasn't already. And John Fox has been kind enough to clean up some of the audio. It was, as usual, one of those situations where you don't know what you're getting until the very last minute. Nobody's fault. But we did manage to get on the air, and we did it with a cell phone and a little tiny audio interface and a wire and a netbook computer. How's that for economical, huh? Oh, yeah, we squeeze every last penny here until Abraham Lincoln screams bloody murder. That's probably not very tasteful when you're talking about Abraham Lincoln, but whatever, you know what I mean. And the beautiful part of it was the extended response that we had via the Horn family, and folks Facebooking and tweeting information all over. Apparently, the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection was absolutely slammed with your phone calls, and I thank you very kindly for them. It made it so much bigger than it already was. Yeah. And so, I don't know what's next. We're going to try to keep the pressure up. You can always keep the pressure up by persisting in calling the WVDEP. They're easy to find on the internet. WVDEP.org, I believe, is the web address, and there's a phone number there, and go get them. But, of course, Copenhagen has begun, the climate conference there. And, you know, in the lead-up to this thing beginning, this conference beginning, the right-wing skullduggery is just through the roof. You know, welcome to the Nixon administration. I don't know, I'm not talking about Obama, but I'm talking about the tactics. I don't know who's responsible for this break-in in Vancouver, but I was talking with Ben Birch, and he was like, you know, this is a plumber's operation. This is straight out of the Nixon playbook. You know, everybody wants to talk about ClimateGate. Well, the hacked emails show that it's all a fraud. Maybe it's just me, but has anybody bothered to take a look at the fact that these emails were stolen? And being as they were stolen, they were subject to modification. Who knows what's in there? Who knows, you know, who knows what the hackers did? Because they were obtained dishonestly. It was a computer burglary. It wasn't an act of patriotism or heroism. It was a very well-funded operation, as was the operation in Canada. Somebody paid to have this done, and it would be nice to trail the money back and find out whether it was ExxonMobil or Massey Energy or Don Blankenship or whomever that ordered this kind of stuff. We don't know. But since whoever did it has a hand in trying to discredit the science, the real science behind global climate change, you got to figure it's probably not Greenpeace. It's probably not the Sierra Club. It's most likely not a big environmental outfit. No, no, no. This is the kind of cloak and dagger, still dark and still of the night, skullduggery that is most frequently engaged in by corporate crooks. And in light of the fact that ExxonMobil has paid for an absolute ton of climate change denial, I think it's a good place to start, a good place to begin looking. But that's and so that's one of the things that's on tap for this evening. Your calls, our conversation, of course, is central to all of this. And so I hope you will participate. Okay. Let me let me just, I said we wouldn't go there, but we'll go there. It is the 8th day of December. We are trying to make it through December. We didn't raise the funds in November to make it through December, but we will try to muddle through. We need help here. You know, things like going to cover this rally. There aren't any local stations that are giving away gasoline these days, and the food isn't free either. And so just by way of a reminder, this stuff does take money to go and do. It takes money to run this network, and it takes money to get down the mountain and go to where we need to be. We were the only live coverage there yesterday. Now, there were a lot of people taping and a lot of people videoing and a lot of people thising and thatting, but we were the only ones who were live. And there is an immediacy to being live and a reality to being live that something that is captured and posted after the fact just can't match. But we can't do this without significant help. And thanks to so many of you who, dollar by dollar, PayPal by PayPal, helped to keep us on the air. But we do sincerely need a lot of help, because we dug the hole a little bit deeper last month, and now just getting to December 31st is going to be like running with blood in your lungs. And January is just January? What's January? You know what I mean? Yeah. So there we are. It's about 12 minutes past the hour. An anniversary is marked this evening. It was 29 years ago. It was 29 years ago. It'll be a couple of hours from now. But, and this is the, I think this had a lot to do with me continuing to pursue radio. Those of you of a certain age will know what UPI was and AP, and you will know what a teletype was. Kind of like the internet, only with paper and a typewriter. It was December the 8th when and there was an alarm system on the UPI machine. It was a great big nasty inky thing, and you just prayed that you weren't the guy who had to change the ribbon on your shift, because it was just a nasty. You hate copier toner? Oh no! Until you've changed the ribbon on a really really ancient UPI machine, you haven't lived. I mean, you just look like a walking stamp pad. Okay, you get inked. But it was December the 8th, 1980. I was working in a little gospel radio station in northwest Alabama. And there is a system of alarm bells, or was, on the UPI teletype. And when it was really, really serious, it would send, you know, there was one bell, there was two bells, three bells, four bells, five bells. And I swear, I think they sent seven bells that night, December the 8th, 1980. And when I heard that, you know, and in your head, when you count them at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, holy crap, because, you know, as the number goes up, hey, somebody's launched the nuclear strike. But I walked around the corner into the dimly lit hallway of the station away outside the broadcast studio, and I simply saw John Lennon shot. Yeah. And I pulled each piece of copy, and I saved it, and it's somewhere in a box somewhere out in one of our storage buildings. And John Lennon was murdered that night. They renamed the area of Central Park across from the Dakota complex where he was shot and where he lived, They renamed it Strawberry Fields. And people still go there, and they still try to leave some sort of a tribute. And it's hard to believe that that was 29 years ago this evening. But for some, but you know, being there, being part of it, being having the live information come to you before anybody else got it, was somehow energizing. It was some, and I hate to say it about such a sad topic, but it was exciting. Now, bear in mind that this was a fundamentalist radio station, and I was forbidden, at pain of losing my job, from even mentioning the murder of John Lennon, because after all, he was a demon in human form. But there was something about that process, you know, so you've got this earth-shattering news that you're not allowed to share. And instead, you have to cue it up, and here's the Happy Goodman family with Drop Kick Me Jesus through the goalposts of life. Get out of the way, because Merlene Goodman's got her big hair going today, brethren and sistren. Yeah. Yeah. So maybe a little bit of John Lennon, a little bit of Beatles throughout the evening, a break here and a break there, if you wish. That and a whole lot more. A little declaration coming from the fine and saintly folks at the Roman Catholic Church. For those of you in the audience who happen to be gay, yeah, we'll get to that too. Promise. Not going to let this one slide by. I didn't get to it on Friday and felt bad enough about that as it was. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
I'm still missing.
Yeah, me too.
I think he would have a lot to say to me. A whole lot.
Oh, I do too, Susan. I think there would be an abundant... Yeah. Well, can you imagine him sitting still? I mean, what would he have done during the Iraq War? What would he have done during... how would he have responded to Barack Obama last week saying that, you know... We're going to keep playing in the Afghan meat grinder.
Oh yeah, yeah. And I remember about those telephone bills. You only get that many bills when.
Yeah, when something awful was happening, there were never seven good news bills.
Yeah, assassinations. It's always assassinations, or you know, invasions. It's never something good. It's never something wonderful. It's always something catastrophic.
Yeah. And that felt pretty. And for somebody, you know, for somebody my age, you know, that was 1980. I was 17 years old. I was a senior in high school. And that was like a kick in the gut.
Well, for me, it was a major kick in the gut because I was one of the generation that was, I was a Beatle people.
Yeah.
I waited out for hours outside of the security fence outside of SeaTac Airport when I was a teenager. And in the 60s, you know, when they were still touring. When they were still together.
Yeah, and see that's the thing. That night in December 1980, that was when any hope of because the hope sprung eternal that someday the Beatles would reunite.
Yeah.
Well, Mark David Chapman took care of that.
Yeah. The Beatles produced two geniuses, and both of them are dead. John Lennon and George Harrison.
Yep. And it most
there's something about musical genius. For some reason, they don't live very long.
But the art itself does, and that is the beautiful thing about art.
That lives on forever. Yeah. as far as to go back to the emails that were hacked, these guys really shouldn't want to go there.
But?
Because, well, let's face it. The Republicans as a set are tend towards a regimented mindset. They don't really, you know, think that way. Democrats being more of a freewheeling sort, we produce better hackers. They really don't want to get stuff off.
But that's the thing. We don't need to resort to criminal misconduct. Because the criminal misconduct that's already been resorted to is more than enough. It's criminal misconduct that has led us to this place where we are, where the planet is so thoroughly imperiled, Susan.
No.
I mean, if you were listening yesterday, as Robert Kennedy Jr. laid out chapter and verse, the crimes that constitute mountaintop removal and the burning of coal for power generation in this country, there's not a doubt left. And the only response the other side has is, yeah, but I get paid to do it.
Yeah. Well, they paid the guys that, well, no, that's a bad analogy, supposedly. But personally, I think it's a real good one. They paid the guys at Dachau, too.
Well, one of the seminal moments yesterday was when RFK Jr. said, if somebody used ammonium nitrate explosives on your community every day and bombed you relentlessly, what would you call those people? And 300 voices at the same time screamed, terrorists!
Yeah.
And if they poisoned your children with mercury to the point that they literally dumbed your children down and they did it intentionally and knowing what mercury does, and they were remorseless, what would you call those terrorists?
Well, honey, they already done it. I blame the coal company, the coal industry, for my husband's asthma.
Yeah.
It's part of his COPD is a real nice case of the asthma. And the coal industry is responsible for a massive upsurge in the asthma rate in this country. I blame the coal industry for my children not being as smart as they could have been, even though they are very smart. They could have been a lot smarter.
Yeah, that's the point. I mean, we've been burning coal for energy for how long? And most of that was utterly unregulated, and it's still largely unregulated. And how many IQ points have we lost per generation?
Yeah, I can forgive them in the 19th century because they didn't know better.
Well, they weren't really burning it for electricity. They weren't really burning it for electricity in the 19th century.
Yeah, I know. I can forgive them in the first part of the 20th century because they didn't really know better. The last part of the 20th century, they damn sure knew better.
Well, but that's why I said it is an ongoing criminal enterprise, because there is evidence to suggest that they doggone well did know what they were doing in the early part of the 20th century. Go back to that quote. Was it Reverbo who shared it with us? I don't recall. But that quote from Thomas Edison in the early part of the 20th century saying, you know, I hope a few years from now we're still not burning coal like this. This is the dumbest way to get electricity I've ever seen. He knew long ago. You know, I kind of missed one. I posted it on my Facebook page that, you know, I'd sort of let one slide. But exactly a month ago, the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection issued a report. Now, that report, Susan, was generated by virtue of a command from Randy Huffman, who is the embodiment of incompetence, but he commanded that a study be done by the WVDEP of all coal ash dams in West Virginia, okay, because of what happened almost a year ago at Kingston, Tennessee. Well, okay, so they went out to try to do it. Now, bear in mind that the DEP is charged with monitoring these dams. Get this. In the course of inspecting these dams, the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection, remember, protection, found two dams that it didn't even know existed. And of the dams they inspected, two of them were in unsatisfactory condition, and three of them were in poor condition. Now, how did they get that way? They got that way because the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection doesn't do its job. You know, it's 100 people short in the area that serves southern West Virginia. It's 100 people short, and the governor of this state has said, well, I ain't going to replace them or nothing. Because he doesn't want them there. He doesn't want them to do their job.
No.
You know, so who do we drag out of bed and bring the tar and feathers to when one of those coal ash dams fails? Who do we do that with? I'm speaking figuratively, of course.
I really would like to know, because there are times when I would I have to tell you, there are times when I think maybe that's what it's going to take, is to literally do it.
No, we can't. No, because we are not barbarians.
We're better than them.
Yeah.
We're better than them. We can't do that.
This has to be, it always has to be nonviolent.
Oh, I can sure think about it and dream about it.
I know.
I only hope that their karma, whatever it is, comes back on them and just stomps them flat.
You are free to hope that.
Yeah. Yeah, and every time I think of Marsh Fork or any of the other dams, and I think, those people are just sitting there and they know it's going to fail. And they don't care. They don't care.
No. They care as long as there are profits being made. If something like that was to get in the way of Appalachian Power in the case of coal ash dams, or get in the way of Massey Energy in the case of anything else, whether it be Marsh Fork or Brushy Fork or any of those dams, if that got in the way of profit making, they'd care. Understand? I mean, let's not make too broad a statement. If it interfered with the profit process, they would care. If on the other hand, 1,000 people die the instant that the Brushy Fork impoundment fails, and I'm not going to say if, I'm going to say when, because it's man-made and therefore flawed and doomed to fail. And when that does, and 1,000 people die, the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection will say, well, you know, they told us it was safe. You know, when at the same time we look at them and go, you dumbasses, you let them blast 200 feet within 200 feet of that dam. What were you thinking?
You know what I would like to see? I know it's not going to happen because it's unconstitutional, but I would love to see it. I would like to see those people being forced to live just downstream from those dams. Well, you can't force them because it's unconstitutional, but I would like to see them, for a week, 2 weeks, force them to stay there and say, guys, for the next week or a month, you better pray. Pray. It doesn't rain. Or pray there isn't any blasting. Or pray God doesn't decide to cause a little grain of sand to go down and cause the others to come down. Because you will be the first one to go.
Yep.
Maybe that would get it through your head.
Well, but understand, Susan, they will never live there, okay? They won't. They don't live near the mess they make. All those knuckleheads and idiots and chowder brains from the mountain removal thugs who showed up yesterday, they don't live. They don't live in Whitesville. They don't live.
I understand that.
They don't live in Clear Fork or no. They live far, far away from the hell they raise. And therefore, they don't care.
They would have to be forced.
Pardon?
Yeah, I understand that. I understand that. They would have to be forced. It would have to be kind of the type of thing where, okay, your sentence here is, you get to stay there for a month. I realize it's never going to happen. But, oh, it would be fun to make them sweat it out for a month. Even if, nothing would probably happen, but even if it made them sweat blood and maybe made them think, it would be a nice thing. But, of course, it won't happen. Too bad. Because these people do not live in the at-risk areas. What do they care?
Right. That's the whole point. You know, when that impoundment finally does go, you know where Don Blankenship will be, Susan. He'll be bunkered down, surrounded by lawyers, hooting "Act of God" like a murder of crows.
He'll be in France, probably, or someplace like that, or on the Riviera, or in Monaco. Visiting the casinos. I doubt if he'll even be in the country. Because that way he won't have to be bothered by the press.
Well, yeah, you're getting a response from our buddy Lee in the chat room. He says, Dear News Ninja, it ain't never, ever going to happen, including the caring part.
Of course it's not.
So since we cannot impose morality on these monsters, the only solution is to stop it altogether.
Yeah.
Now, do I want them to starve, and do I want their sort of orange colored wives to have to give up their tanning beds? No.
Orange colored.
Well, yeah, they've got these tanning beds, and they get their nails done regularly, and the Massey wives are worse by a factor of 100 than the Massey men, and that's because they've got a lot invested in this. They've got this sort of orange color to them from the tanning beds, and when the bulbs start going, they get kind of stripy too. But never mind. Who the hell am I? I don't want them to give up their tanning beds and their nail sessions. I don't want them to go hungry. Whether they realize it or not, I do realize that they're West Virginians, they're Appalachian people just like me. And I don't want my family going hungry, and I don't want their family going hungry. I want them to have work. There's a story out there, Susan, and I'm glad you sort of opened this door for me. There's a story out there about what is being called cash for caulkers. Are you familiar with this? That they want to take some of the leftover stimulus money and start providing means for people to weatherize their homes and create jobs that way. And I say, great, go for it.
Sure.
But the fact of the matter is, when you look at what's left over, if you took a big chunk of that and you sent it to Appalachia and you created a program whereby we, A, acknowledge that the coal companies will never do what they're supposed to do in the form of reclamation, If you recognize that and you shut down mountaintop removal altogether and you say to all the out-of-work dozer operators, because they're not miners, they're dozer operators, they're heavy equipment operators, mm-hmm. they ain't miners. If you say to them, okay, look, you're out of work, but you're not out of work. We've got work for you to do for the rest of your natural lives until you see fit to retire. And we're going to pay you the same amount of money, and you're going to have the same benefits. Because this would all fall under Davis-Bacon as a public works project, and therefore, you know, it would pay prevailing wage, which would be really good money. And say, okay, you know, put those damn things in reverse and start cleaning up the mess you made. We would have 100% employment of every former mountain remover in this state and in Appalachia. And the fact of the matter is, there's a bunch of them who aren't working right now, not because of a bunch of tree huggers, but because they use the market, the slugs like Don Blankenship use so-called market forces to put people out of work because they don't think that the price of coal is high enough to suit them.
Which is one of the most despicable things, because he's doing it for political reasons. He's not doing it for economic reasons.
Right.
Yeah, that's just utterly despicable. On a final note, here in Oregon we have what you might call a temperate climate. Want to know what we got down to last night?
17?
15.
You don't think I watch the weather, do you?
Well, actually, it was 15 at 2 o'clock in the morning, and that was when I, at 12 o'clock at night, I should say, and that's when I went to bed. It probably dropped some.
Yeah. But no, it's been, you know, I watched the Civil War, you know, the Oregon State-Oregon game, and it was obvious there was plenty of cold people in them stands.
Well, that was before the cold snap hit.
Oh, I know. And now this thing that's blowing eastward with blizzard conditions, oh, God, I'm scared to death. I won't have a roof. I mean, you think I'm kidding.
I'm just getting hammered. Well, I'm not. I don't think you're kidding at all, because I've seen what in Iowa.
Yeah, and the last wind that...
I wanted to ask you.
I was going to say, the last wind that blew through, we had shingles that were standing straight up on the roof.
Ouch. That's bad. Hopefully, most of the wind will, you know, dissipate on the Great Plains.
Yeah.
Plains being good for wind. You know what I just did today?
What's that?
I went and blew $700.
On?
On glasses.
Hooray!
Glasses.
That's not a bad thing.
I hate doing that. I really do.
Yeah, but being able to see is a real bonus.
Yeah, I know. I let it go for several years because, you know, I know it's going to really, really hurt. And so, yeah, it really hurts. And, you know, I don't get expensive frames or anything like that. It's just, glasses are expensive.
Oh, yes, they are. And made more so. Well, it's kind of like dentistry. You know, that's another one of the failings that's in all of this healthcare debate. We have this ongoing discussion about how we're going to make it okay for the insurance companies, but we don't talk about two of the most essential things that are that involve human health, and that is dentition and vision.
Mm-hmm.
The coverage is miserable.
One other thing.
Yeah, podiatry.
Hearing.
Oh, hearing, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Donald, during the Korean War, he didn't have a choice. You when you're in the Army, you go where you're sent and you sleep where you're told to, and so on and so forth.
Right, and lots of the, and lots of things in the Army that make big, bad, nasty noises.
Well, he was told to lay down and sleep, so he did, and what the where they told him to was right next to a mile and a half of 155 long toms, which proceeded to all go off.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Operation called Operation Thunderbolt, which the Army now claims that they can't prove that he was anywhere near, so they're not going to pay for his hearing loss. Ah, gotta love it. They had, they had this big fire.
Oh, I know about the big fire. The big fire in St. Louis?
Yeah, the thing is, they claim, anytime they don't want to pay a claim, they say, your records were in that fire. Never.
Oh, General Grant's records were in that fire. There were records in that fire of veterans who weren't born yet. I mean, everything. It's the most convenient excuse. It's such a convenient excuse for the VA that you wonder if maybe somebody didn't walk in with a match.
Yeah.
I mean, and see, it's really frustrating even for people who don't necessarily want to, you know, not pursuing benefits or anything, but I went trying to find out the details of my father's brother's last days. Just because I wanted to put that together for the sake of posterity. Yeah, not after any money or anything. After history.
Because, what's this guy's dead. It's not like you can get any benefits.
Because, you know, it was the Second World War, and details were sketchy, and things were gotten wrong. You know, when you've got that many people involved in that big an operation. And we just wanted to clear up some questions. Because, among other things, when they sent him back, my grandmother looked at him and said, that's not him. And so there's always been this little lingering,
Well, there's a way around that.
Ain't going to dig him up.
Well, in that case, then you're SOL.
Right.
Got a question.
Yes, ma'am.
Agnes get something in the mail recently?
Agnes did. And is just tickled silly. She has been doling out the little cups to herself judiciously. Making it last.
Well, now she doesn't need to dole because she has lots.
Oh, no, that doesn't, no. Agnes has a squirrel gene, Susan. There's no such thing as lots of anything. There's always stuff to be put back for a rainy day.
In case people are wondering, tell them to go to the Republic of Tea website and check out a tea called Comfort and Joy. I recommend it. I would suggest that she, the extra tea she has, put it in several Ziploc bags, squeeze out the air, and stick it in the freezer. That way it will not go stale.
The same has already been done.
Well,
great minds think alike, Susan.
I shall admit. Oh, yes. Good deal. And I really wish... I'm going to see if I can't find a decaffeinated version of that.
Oh, that would be wonderful because it smells so good.
No, at the very least, you can take a sniff of hers every now and then.
I can take a little tiny sip and not zoom around the room. And you know, if I was really dedicated to it, I would start doing the gradual climb back up the slope like the guy in Princess Bride with his iocane powder in it. You remember the scene. So I could become immune to it. But I haven't gotten around to that yet. Susan, it's been a wonderful conversation. Stay warm, for goodness sake. I hope that nastiness passes out there and you get your usual wet, miserable, and gray 6 months of what November's like around here in March.
Yeah. Yes, I sincerely hope so, because I really need my rain. I don't like it when it's clear and cold.
No, that's just...
Give me rain.
You know, and that's the thing. Once you get... I'm told, it's like David in Tennessee said, once you get used to it, you're okay with it. Sunshine? Eh,
yeah,
sunshine.
I was raised in Seattle. I'm used to it. I call it liquid sunshine.
There you go. Exactly.
I don't even bother with an umbrella. I'm used to being wet.
Yeah.
They call us ducks for a reason. You know, it's just kind of... Oh, did you hear what some people did?
Which?
Okay, civil working.
Yeah, Oregon State and Oregon.
Oregon State. Right. Oregon State Beavers against the Ducks. Some twit, if I ever find out who I'm going to thump him, it got hold of a duck.
Oh, no.
A wild duck. Duct taped its legs together. And then got some spray paint and spray painted it brown. Orange, I mean.
Orange, yeah, beaver orange. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just sick.
So, needless to say, the poor duck now cannot shed any water because of what the paint did to its feathers. So, assuming that it didn't inhale any of the fumes, they got it in a bird sanctuary where it's going to wait. It's going to have to stay there 4 months until it molts.
People. I got a little primer on Oregon State, and was told that, you know, the liberal side of Oregon is the liberals go to Oregon, and the conservatives go to Oregon State, and
exactly.
Well, that sounds like typical conservative behavior. Torment an animal. Yuck. Susan, have a wonderful evening. I know. We'll talk soon.
Love to Agnes the kid.
All right. Thanks for the tea.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. And rolling onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
Busy
day yesterday.
Huh?
Busy day yesterday.
Oh, were you protesting yesterday?
Oh, we were protesting.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I heard about that. Was it successful?
Oh, it was very successful. We got the public advocate there. Somebody asked her if she came out to see the poor woman's name's Nixon. I mean, you know, you're screwed when your name's Nixon, you know.
Really?
It's like you were born on a rotten day. But somebody said, you know, hey, did you get to come out to the protest? She said, no, I was one of the people assigned to the phones to answer all the phone calls, and there were lots of them.
Mm.
So there were people, you know, there were people at the protest, about 300 of us. And there were people all over the world who were dialing as fast as their little fingers would push buttons.
Well, what's the next step with that?
We're working on that. Frankly, I don't know what the answer to that is, but my personal thought is that we need a massive action. Now that we've done it in Charleston, we need a massive action up at the EPA in D.C. to sort of help them along. You know, Lisa Jackson did a good thing. With that CO2 declaration, I mean, you can tell she did a good thing because people like Jim Inhofe turned purple.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, obviously that struck a nerve. I was, you know, of course, I'm surprised to hear it, but I mean, you guys, you know, follow up, you know, while you have some momentum for sure.
And the problem is we've got this momentum at exactly the wrong time of year.
No, because the weather is so horrific, right?
Yeah.
Well... I don't know. I mean, you have to be making some headway. I mean, because the whole situation is just so obviously wrong. And there's some of these characters you describe, like that guy you were talking about before who I almost fell out of my chair. You say he'll just be shouting, act of God. You know what I mean? It's like.
But I'm not, Sandra, I'm not making that up. There's history.
That's what I'm saying, but it's disgusting.
You go back to February 1972. And the Buffalo Creek disaster that was just a few million gallons, not billions like we're dealing with now.
Yeah.
A few million gallons of toxic waste going down Buffalo Creek Holler killed 125 people. And before the water stopped moving, lawyers for Pittston Coal were screaming at the top of their lungs, act of God. And they screamed it all the way through the trial process. And most of the people who were whose lives, whose homes, whose very futures, their entire existence was totally devastated, got next to nothing out of it. There was no compensation whatsoever for what was done to them.
Ugh, it's incredible. Hey, did you hear about that horrible Rush Limbaugh, what he was saying?
There's something new?
Well, I don't know. Maybe I'm late because I haven't had time to look at anything, but look at the Huffington Post and this thing about him talking about the black frame of mind.
Oh, no.
And it's terrible, and Tiger Woods' choice of females is not...
Oh, wrong. There it is. Oh, my God.
I was like,
That's from today.
Yeah, that's that F. You know, he don't need to talk about nothing.
Yeah, what is this, from a segment of Black Like Me by Rush Limbaugh?
Well, I'm just saying he needs to keep black or anything African-American out his mouth. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, yeah. Jesus.
You know, it's just sort of like, don't even say nothing, you know?
Anyway. Oh, my. Well, let's just enjoy this. Hang on a minute. Let me see if I can get this cooking.
Did you find the audio?
Yeah, here he is.
Chairman and whatever else he is, Reverend Jackson.
I hate that. I got to go in here and make a quick modification so the audio will go back to normal. But when he does that, when he does that thing where he mocks Jesse Jackson, oh, it just makes me crazy.
Oh no, he's just so foul. And I mean, excuse me.
Tavis, I'm sorry. There. Okay, go ahead.
Oh no, go ahead, play it.
All right, here we go.
Tavis Smiley talked to the Monochrome Coalition chairman and whatever else he is, Reverend Jackson. And the question, some think the blame Bush rhetoric no longer applies and Obama used so successfully in a campaign.
He essentially owns more than when Bush left office with 30,000 troops in Afghanistan. We'll now go into 100,000. So we kind of own the Afghanistan mission. We bailed out the banks. We kind of own a plan now where you have more foreclosures than you do have modifications. We're losing jobs by the droves. Unemployment levels are disastrously high. We are the canary in the mine. We're on the front side of its pain, the back side of its prosperity. Urban America is black, but Appalachian basin is white. We must not be seen as marginal American.
Now, I'll tell you what's going on.
Excuse me, Sandra, but what I realize that Rush doesn't like the way that the Reverend Jackson speaks because he mocks him. But what was wrong in what he said there?
Well, no, that's what I was laughing at as I was listening to it. I'm like, that dumb idiot. He can go ahead and say that because I don't really see anything but some truth telling.
That's all it sounds like to me. Well, this. Okay, now we get to the commentary point part. This is going to be fun.
I'm here with this, the Reverend Jackson, and I got two more stories in the stack today about how black unemployment is through the roof. Black unemployment is terrible. The black frame of mind is terrible. They're depressed. They're down. Obama not doing anything for them. How is that hoax and change working for you? They're all livid. I mean, they thought they were going to be an exact 180-degree economic reversal, and it's done nothing but get bad for everybody. But they're especially upset about it because they look at him as one of them, and now they feel abandoned. And I'm sure Tiger Woods' choice of females not helping them out with their attitudes there either.
Oh, will somebody just open up a crack in the earth and swallow him up?
Well, no, but anyway, I mean, the guy is so... Just go outside of it. I mean, what is he talking about? You know, it's like, I'm sorry. I just, I mean, it's just such weak analysis, too. My God, they're paying a lot of money for that.
That is $40 million a year worth of genius broadcasting, Sandra. Watch your mouth.
They're just straight up listening to, I was just listening to what he was saying. It was just like, are you kidding me? It's so simplistic and just weak. That's weak. And it's sort of like, ain't nobody, no black person worry about if Tiger is screwing them white people. That's his thing. Who gives a F? You know what I'm saying?
Well, right. I mean, it's like Rush is still pissed off about Loving versus Virginia or something.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I was like, where are you? Ain't nobody looking at none of that. They looking at, damn, what a creep. you know, anybody looking at, you know, who or what they, what color they are, it's more like, damn, dude, why'd you get married?
What would he have said if it, at the risk of talking about Tiger Woods, what would he have said if Tiger's wife had been black?
Well, no, who, you know, the whole thing is just, I don't know, I, you know, for him to, you know, twist it, oh, I don't know, I suppose I'm just really stunned, because I haven't listened to Rush in a while, and I'm just really stunned by how really simplistic it is. Is that how his stuff is all the time?
He is, with the inauguration of Barack Obama, Rush Limbaugh jumped the shark. Now, I don't know if you were listening to Malloy last night, but toward the end of the program, I mean, I thought individual hair follicles on my head were just going to let loose and fall out when I heard this one creepy guy call in.
Oh, the people, where did people come from who called?
Ooh, I mean, yeah, under what rock? Because they're all under the same rock.
Is Malloy getting some sort of traction somewhere?
He's irritating somebody.
Because he's been getting some interesting calls from the Neanderthals.
Malloy got called a self-hating white guy who disapproved of white culture.
I was rolling. He said white culture was McDonald's. I was dying. He didn't go there. You know, Mike said it was McDonald's. I just was rolling. I thought, wow. Because those men who called, they just gave me the creep.
Yeah, white culture. Like those guys. Yeah, like those guys are hanging out doing the minuet.
Oh, God, no. It's just sort of, I just think it's kind of interesting that he sort of seems to be picking up a lot of those recently.
But they are absolutely, what's left of them, and I think this is what's important here, what's left of them have gone absolutely batshit crazy, Sandra.
Well, no, I do think that must be what's going on, because for Rush Limbaugh to fall back on the black people are upset about seeing some black celebrity dating whitey, that's unbelievably just, I don't know, can't even register that, you know?
Yeah, it really doesn't. There's nothing on the scale to measure it by, and you know. But it's what and who they are, Sandra. Did you see this explanation from Godzilla from Wasilla? You know, Caribou Barbie. Did you see her daddy's explanation for why she came home from her first semester of college when she went off to Hawaii?
Why in the world would he publicize that? I mean, do these people have any sense of where they're at now? I was just sort of flabbergasted. I said, this fool did not say that dumbass couldn't deal with the Asians, so she had to go. What the F?
You know, I think, you know, when they lose their minds, as they clearly have, they also lose the ability to control, because we've all got one, Sandra, and you know and I know we've all got one. The wing nuts, when they lost their minds, they also lost all control over their internal monologues.
Well, yeah, that's okay. That's it exactly, Bob. That is it. It's like, we, you know, you all, you know, anybody with any sense, well, we think whatever. God knows I do. But, you know, you're able to have some sort of measured response. You're aware of your surroundings. You're self-aware.
Right, but they've got some sort of, I guess, socio-political Tourette's.
Yeah, because that was crazy. I was laughing. I said, oh, my God. It was just cringy. I felt kind of embarrassed for dude, because he thought that would be, you know, that's perfectly okay. And we would just say, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. You know what?
Yeah, so she Caribou Barbie goes off to college in Hawaii at the tender age of 18, and she said that Hawaii was a little too perfect. Perpetual sunshine isn't necessarily conducive to serious academics for 18-year-old Alaska girls. And, okay. So I guess she needed to be cloistered in some dark room, where it's nighttime six, 9 months out of the year or something. But the fun part of this is that the reporters went off to interview her dad, Chuck Heath, and he said that there were just too many Asians and Pacific Islanders in Hawaii, and that she was uncomfortable. And this is the quote: "They were a minority type thing, and it wasn't glamorous, so she came home." I know. But she loved Idaho because it was much like Alaska and yet still outside.
Oh, God. Well, no, you know, I just sort of flashed. I flashed at my, you know, little trip that I had. I spent like a summer in Alaska. You know, and me and my friends were scared at every turn because we were like...
Oh, that had to be like a season behind the Iron Curtain.
It was funny. It was me and a busload of sort of what's-its. Well, I say what's-its are like mixed-race people. So it was me and some what's-its. We thought we'd go up there and work for a summer because we all wanted to go to Greece. You know what I'm saying? Let's
get
some money. We got the money, but we also got people with, like, bull guns pointing at us and, you know, weird white men stalking us. I mean, it was just...
Yeah, and that's especially beautiful because in her book, she celebrates the social diversity of Alaska.
I know, this is in 1985, and, you know, I mean, I was all of nothing, just a baby. And, we you don't have no sense. Well, I didn't. I'm from California. I'm like, whatever. So I thought, yeah, let's go. That, I was scared out of my mind most of the time because of these weird, I'm sorry, white men. The women were okay, but the men were just like, I was like, ew.
Ooh. Yeah, well, you know, that social diversity in Alaska, Wasilla is 80% or more white.
Yeah, you know, so it was just, but I loved Alaska. It's beautiful. Oh, my
yeah,
God.
We just let the wrong people go there.
It's so nice. I mean, beyond that, we had a great time. You know, we just sort of ran in packs and sort of hooked up with nicer boys that we found, and we were okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you got to work the buddy system.
We just sort of worked it, and it was all good. But I have to tell you, there's some cases up there. Damn.
Just not home.
Oh, my God. But, yeah.
Igloos, smoke coming out the igloo, but nobody home.
No, God. And the thing is, it's sad because we were up there, I think, just a few months before Valdez, you know? So, and I haven't been back there since, so I don't know what that oil spill did. I heard that it changed the landscape quite a bit, though.
Oh, it wrecked the landscape, it wrecked the people, it wrecked economies, it wrecked everything.
Mm. But, Palin, yeah, that's, I don't understand why this woman is getting so much play. Is it just the corporate media?
No, I'm convinced that she is a stalking horse, Sandra. She is the attention placeholder for the weirdos. And as we get closer to 2012, their allegiances, you know, because you can move and lead and prod and poke and make that birther, bagger, deather, tenther crowd do anything you want to, as long as you're using the right buzzwords. And she will be eventually the Caribou Barbie will essentially be eventually be replaced by a so-called legitimate candidate, and you know that process has already begun. When you've got a weirdo like Rick plays with dead babies Santorum.
Oh God, I heard he was like making noises. I'm like, get back in your hole.
No, he's back, and he has explained that he said of Sarah Palin. First of all, he's thinking that he could be president. Santorum is. Yeah, I know. He showed up yesterday on some ABC show, and he said we need to stand four square on the traditional values. And then he was asked about, you know, because you got to say that. And then he was asked about Godzilla from Wasilla, and he said whether she's qualified to be president. And he said, no, I'll let the people decide that. I think, you know, she's done a lot to draw attention to herself that's positive. And then this is the fun part. She's done some things that, you know, certainly are going to cause her to have to do some explaining if she runs for president. But right now I think she's on a roll. She's having a good time. She's having an impact. You know, just another pasty-faced, doughy white guy, frankly, putting down a woman.
Oh!
You know, when we criticize her on the left, we criticize her because she's an idiot.
She's just insane.
But, you know, somebody like Sanctum Sanctorum goes immediately for the gender.
Right, because they're all so uncomfortable with women at the best of times, let alone someone like her that's doing a power play. Yeah, that ain't gonna go down too well. Did you hear about Obama calling Conyers and telling him to stop dissing him?
No.
Yeah, well, Conyers said, well, I'm not really too pleased about the Afghanistan decision or the health care. And Obama said, well, let's chat. And he said, no, I don't feel like chatting. I'm sorry.
Oh, man.
He said, I don't feel like chatting. You know, I'm just sort of kind of sick of, you know, sort of the half-half. He didn't say half-half, but I'm saying. He just, yeah, it was just sort of a really funny article.
Well, and now there's a little bit of stuff sneaking out about this Afghanistan plan. I don't know if you caught it or not. It started, I guess, Friday night, and it started with a statement by Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, and this is a real doozy. Picking up on the tired old rhetoric of the right wing, when she was in Brussels, Secretary Clinton said, I want to make clear to the people of Afghanistan and Pakistan that we're looking for a long-term partnership. And then went on to say that we don't intend to cut and run.
Well, that's because Obama's sitting up there triangulating with himself. He didn't know what he's doing.
You know, there's just something obscene sounding about triangulating with oneself, Sandra.
Well, that's how, because he's being obscene. That's why I said that. It's like, you know, he's talking out of his ear. He ain't even making any sense. It's like, okay, first you said a... He even had the nerve to say a date. Didn't he say 2011?
Yeah, but now, like I said, now that's beginning to fall apart, Sandra.
Well, that's what I'm saying, because as soon as his master came out, which is Gates, you know how I feel about Gates, a holdover.
Yeah.
He's omnipresent. He all of a sudden said a different story, too.
Well, and that's the thing I saw. It showed up on CNN's website. This was one of those weird little internet moments. It seemed like it was only up for a couple of minutes, and then it was gone. There was this story, and it was their headline story that we may be in Afghanistan well past 2011. I'm like, boom, this is, and then boom, it's gone. And I mean, it's not on their list anymore. It's just gone. And what they're saying is, well, some troops might come home in 2011, but we anticipate being there for years.
Yeah, no, I mean, but the thing is then Obama or wherever out the White House, they're trying to say, oh, no, there is some sort of definite timeline, right? So, you know, and then they're backing off. I mean, basically all it comes down to is that was a load on Tuesday, and the perpetual war continues. That's the only way I can look at it.
Well, the caption under a picture of General McChrystal, you know, General Tillman cover-up. There's a caption under him that says, General Stanley McChrystal said the next 18 months will be critical, but he is confident of success in Afghanistan. And I hate that kind of writing. It just, like Mark Twain said, it just gives me the fantods. Because, you know, what is success?
You know, they've sold the base, as they call us, down the river. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And he went on, I love this headline, though. It says, McChrystal uprooting bin Laden and Taliban, key to winning in Afghanistan. And, you know, every now and then a little bit of Freudian slippage that just works its way into the for-profit media, Sandra. Uprooting bin Laden? No, exhuming bin Laden.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. That dude is dead, you know.
Well, did you get, speaking of Robert Gates, did you catch his little pronouncement over the weekend?
What else did he say?
He was asked about bin Laden. And I don't know, maybe George Snuffleupagus on ABC just has some sort of mind ray powers that he can make people just say things. But Bob Gates just looked at him and said, you know, we haven't had any credible intelligence on him in years.
Yeah, that's because he's been dead for years. I mean, the thing is, everything is so screwed up. These people can just sort of say and do what they want now. I mean, I have to laugh at, I think the thing that was killing me was Bernanke. You know, I was laughing at Malloy actually brought that up about what he's saying. I mean, they're just straight up blatant now. This fool's talking about, after all he's done, oh, well, we need to get that Social Security money now.
Did Bernanke just notice it's laying around or something? Or?
Well, no, you know, he, you know, the whole sort of, we have to rein in the entitlements now. After what these people did?
Yeah, because the entitlements are the problem.
Now they're turning their I don't know what, gaze or whatever stare onto that. And, I mean, it's just disgusting because, you know, Obama now wants to use some of the TARP because we made some sort of amount of money off of it. And we want to start using it to help people.
Yeah, that's what that Cash for Caulkers thing is. And, you know, like I said earlier, I'm in favor of sending a few billion down here where I am. You know, not because I'm trying to get my front feet in the trough, or even my back feet, for that matter, any feet. I'd like to see a little, you know, turnaround for the first time in 125 years in this region of the country. Although I recognize there are other regions that are equally hard hit. But of course, you know, that's, well, I'm working on a little proposal to send to Senator Byrd. Just a letter from a constituent. Hey, here's an idea. But this, you know, I love the idea of getting people to weatherize their homes, but the fact of the matter is, it's got to be done in such a way that the biggest problems are dealt with first. You know, we can't be giving away $12,000 a house for somebody's McMansion.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, it's just these people who are in power will do anything but actually create jobs in the vacuum of where the private sector has stopped. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The private sector has stopped. They're all up and cheering about, oh, we only lost 11,000 jobs. But that's because at this point there's really no more jobs to lose.
That's the first thing that I thought of, Sandra. I actually thought of you when I saw those numbers. I thought, you know, is it possible that those numbers are going down because we've hemorrhaged every job we have to hemorrhage?
How many months did we have 700,000 or more? Bob, it was really, remember how that was? It was horrific.
Yeah.
And also right now, I think there's 8 or 10,000 a day of people who are losing their little benefits. And I guess the Senate is just sitting on their hands. No one's doing anything.
Well, that's because, yeah, the Senate is sitting on their hands. That's because Harry Reid doesn't know how to lead.
Well, it's just, but these, you know, every day all these people are like, where are they going? Because there's no jobs and there's no money. I just wonder what's supposed to happen to those people.
Did you catch any of the incredibly stupid debate in the Senate today on the so-called Hatch-Nelson or Nelson-Hatch amendment?
Well, I shouldn't even know what that is. What is that amendment?
Well, that was an amendment all about, of course, abortion.
Oh, God, you mean that Nelson, that asshole who wants to...
Yeah, a so-called Dino. You know, he's got a D behind his name, but, you know...
That guy is awful. He wants to make it so any government subsidies can't be used to...
Right. What they're trying to do is they're trying to cram that thing. As far as I could understand it, you know, me and my tiny mind, it smelled an awful lot like the Pitt Stupak thing from the House.
Yeah, no, but that I just read right now that was voted down.
It was. It was.
4-45, right?
Yeah, but you know, but look at the vote totals. So, you know, it was distressing. And, you know, it was a bipartisan amendment, too, because there was a pasty-faced, doughy white guy with a D behind his name with a rug on top of his head that looked like it was fit to roost buzzards. And therefore it was bipartisan. And, you know, I sat there and I listened to all this crap about the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. And of course, it's being propounded by a Mormon. And I'm thinking, you know, the end times really are here.
Yeah, no, for sure. That when I hear that kind of stuff going on, I'm just like, wow, this is really not Democratic Republic anymore. I think that hell. Did you? Obama came on, I guess, to the Hill on Sunday, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know that he didn't even mention the public option.
No, it was it's like not mentioned, right?
I mean, and it's just sort of like, hasn't anyone told him that if they pass some BS without any sort of cost, I'm calling it cost control now, that, you know, I'm praying that it's going to get killed. I'll be honest with you. I'm terrified of being forced to prove that I have health care insurance.
And you have reason to be terrified.
You know, because that's like, I don't know.
And that's why I said earlier, talking with Susan, Sandra, that it seems like this debate is turning more and more and more on how we can make it palatable for the insurance companies. And the more we talk about that, the less likely it becomes that we will make it that we will make life tolerable for the taxpayers.
No, and also that whole Conyers thing, saying, well, even this bill, it won't kick in for 3 years. He said all the people who need it will be dead. Oh, I was rolling. I thought, So yeah.
So now let's just recap real quick. Now we have a proposal for a health care plan that won't kick in until 2013.
Right.
And we have an exit from Afghanistan for 2011, but we'll wind up having troops there until God only knows when, past 2013.
And we have.
I mean, do you get the notion you're sort of being sold a bill of goods?
Yeah, and on top of that, we have Bernanke saying that, well, the entitlements need to be reined in, and Congress, you know, they're talking about how it's mandatory to keep the entitlements going, and Bernanke's saying, well, Congress has the power to stop it. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
But when they ask him about, well, what about taxes, he's saying, oh, no, that's, I can't talk about that. That's, you know, that's not in his repertoire. But he can talk about the entitlements, though.
Right, and we understand why. Because because seniors and poor folks, they carry the likes of Ben Bernanke and this entire nation on their backs.
Yeah, I was trying to explain to some idiot how Reagan doubled the payroll taxes, which was the largest tax increase in the history of America. Oh no, they couldn't hear that because, you know, Reagan cut taxes. I'm like, yeah, not for you, you dumbass. You know what I'm saying?
I know. It's
And anyway, yeah, I know I'm sort of going all over the place, but I'm just kind of like, I'm just sick of the deficit people now coming out the woodwork. It's like, where the hell was you when TARP kicked in? No hue and cry there.
No, that was the crickets.
Crickets. And now all of a sudden they're saying, demanding some fiscal responsibility. It's like, yeah, right. You know what? You know, pound sand, you know? Don't want to hear it.
Yeah, the question is there, and I've got an email here from earlier today that addresses a lot of this. Is there anything more to do than sit and scream?
I'm sorry. That's a good one. I'm going to have to put that in my pocket. Yeah, that's a good one. Listen, I'll let you go, but I have to mention one little thing. It's not, you know, political, or maybe it is, but Florida lost. Thank you.
Yes.
And to see that fool crying like a baby, I'm like, ew.
Oh, you know, it wasn't, oh, God, I don't think it was 2 hours after that game was over. Before the first Tim Tebow demotivational poster was produced, Sandra, and I received it, and it was magnificent, and it was.
Oh shoot! I mean, is he gonna go away now? Are we through with that?
Well, David, you're gonna love this. David in Tennessee wrote me because he is he listens to a lot of sports talk radio down there.
Yeah, oh, God.
And you have not lived, Sandra, until you've listened to sports talk in the South.
No, I know.
And he said he'd heard a guy call in. He said, you know, the guy's a regular caller to sports talk down there, and he's pretty credible because he gets stuff right. And he said, listen, after today, and he was talking about the SEC championship game, he said, understand this. After today, come spring, when everybody else is at the combines, the only place you're going to see Tim Tebow's face is on a Cinnabon down at the Bongo Java.
Yeah, so he's finished, right?
Yes, of course. Oh, he is. What's he got? What position could that little fundamentalist freak play in the pros?
I don't know, but, you know, I could just see him strolling out with his Bible verses under his freaking eyes. I mean, what a complete.
Oh, did you? But did you get around to reading the verse?
Was that the Ezekiel one?
No, no. Saturday he had one from John that said something like, "But be of good courage, for I have conquered the world."
Oh God! I mean,
I wish I was kidding.
Oh God! I mean, it's just yeah.
But that demotivational poster was just a beautiful thing because it was a big close up of Tim Tebow bawling over his eye black, and then underneath it it said defeat. I bet Tim Tebow's tears taste like salty Jesus.
I know, but I mean, it was the crime was a bit much, you know.
But why would we be surprised? He's a crier. He bawled last year when Ole Miss beat him.
Oh. Okay.
And that's when he gave out the 19 words. That's what they call it in Gainesville now, Sandra. The 19 words, and they inscribed them in bronze.
Oh. You know what? Now you're making it up.
No, I am not.
Oh, God. Yeah. Are you kidding me?
No. No.
I just can't deal with the whole persona. I just was like, oh, enough already, you know? Not that I'm thinking that it's insincere or whatever, but it's just sort of the way they just sort of latched on. It's like.
Oh, yeah, and it was our blogger, Texas Betsy, who sent me that demotivational poster, and it was just. But yeah, it's insane. Now the downside of this, because okay, you know, we're probably hemorrhaging listeners now. But anyway, the downside of this is that I sat there and watched Nebraska get completely screwed later on that evening. So
didn't they almost?
Nebraska won.
Okay, so I thought it was some sort of. Kind of weird.
Yeah, Nebraska won, but then they declared a clock review and gave back 1 second so Texas could run out and kick a 48-yard field goal to win.
Well, that's just money, eh? They didn't want because then is it TCU would have played or Boise or somebody?
Cincinnati,
that's right.
And you know what? University of Alabama don't want nothing to do with Cincinnati. Because Tony Pike, and that was the best game of the day, frankly, was Cincinnati versus Pitt.
I heard some of that already.
I mean, they're playing in Pittsburgh. The snow is swirling on the frozen tundra of Heinz Field. Everything's going wrong. Cincinnati favored is down and comes back in the waning moments of the game. And just oh, man, what a game. That was football, you know. That was because it was everything that, you know, was that, you know, there were the tough guys in their shirt sleeves, you know, no long underwear, no thermals. It's freezing. And, you know, every time you get hit, it just feels like there's a fire on you when you're that cold. But, no, Alabama didn't want nothing of Cincinnati or TCU or Boise State.
And so Alabama's just going to play Texas, right? Yawn, man, yawn.
And Texas will get eaten for lunch. And that's the shame of it all. You know, I went to the University of Alabama, Sandra. I'm a Crimson Tide fan, but I've sworn off the Crimson Tide until Nick Saban is gone from the sidelines. Because
you're not a fan?
I am so not a fan. Let me explain why.
Okay.
It's not that I've got anything personal against Nick Saban. It's the fact that the state of Alabama, where there are public schools that don't have adequate bathroom facilities, okay?
Yeah.
Where professors and teachers are taking pay cuts and layoffs at the public universities, the University of Alabama hired Nick Saban at $4.5 million per year with bonuses when he wins the SEC, bonuses when he reaches, you know, like, you know, number one or number two in the country, bonuses when he wins a bowl game, bonuses when he wins a national championship.
Right. Oh, wow.
You know, when you're signed on for $4.5 million, just take a powder on the bonuses. What do you need with bonuses when you're making $4.5 million a year?
Well, yeah, no, exactly. I mean, it is, and especially when you're talking about the system down there. I mean, good Lord. Yeah, I didn't know it was that kind of party.
Oh, it's nasty. It's just
I was always laughing. Remember when that interview with oh, I forget his name. I think he's a basketball coach for one of the Carolina teams. When that guy was yelling, how can you take this much money when the state is in such a, oh, God, what was that guy's name? Famous, you know, well-known basketball coach.
Oh,
One of them old geezers been around forever.
Right, yeah, not John Wooden.
No.
Not Dean Smith.
The North Carolina.
Dean Smith?
No, anyway, but it was just, you know, just another person who's making too much money.
Yeah, no, well, that's the, and they are. And that's, you know, that is a legitimate debate for this country to have. The fact that we call this, we call college football and college basketball amateur athletics, when in fact these are just unpaid basketball and football players on whose backs are being made literally millions of dollars.
Oh, yeah, and then when they get hurt, which happens a lot, they just toss aside, you know?
Right, yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, you're going to lose your scholarship. Guess you're done with college now.
Yeah, no degree to look at, no nothing. I mean, I don't even know how much of it's true, but I'm always interested when I hear about who was that freak that used to punch people out?
The Bobby Knight.
Yeah, but he also had high graduation rates, did you know?
Oh, yeah, he did. And, you know, Joe Paterno's graduation rate is respectable.
Right. So, you know, I have to say, about Knight, it's like, whatever, you know. I mean, at least the parents know that kid's going to get a degree, you know?
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, I have just emailed you the Tim Tebow poster.
Oh, okay. Well, listen, let me let you go, and, yeah, have a good show.
All right. Thanks, Sandra.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye now. I don't know about you, but I just love the wide-ranging conversations that we have here. And look, I'm not talking sports. I mean, this is important stuff. And by the way, if you've never read it and you want to get a liberal perspective on the Deep South, there is a blog out there that is just brilliant, and it's called Left in Alabama. And if you and there, I read an essay there, and I don't, you know, I can't do it on the fly because we're sort of in the middle of a broadcast. But there was an essay there a few weeks back about why Alabama is the way Alabama is. And you know, with me having grown up there, you read it and you just go, wow, and people don't even know this. There's a reason that Alabama has the most pathetic, has the pathetic government that they have. It's by design. Go and browse through Left in Alabama, and you'll find it. And share your thoughts. Marty out in California says my description of Nick Satan at Alabama. He sounds like Jeff Tedford, Berkeley's coach, $200,000 regular salary plus $2 million bonus. Yeah, but that's the thing. Nick Satan is, you know, multi-million dollar regular salary and then additional honking bonuses. So the whole point is I don't want Nick Satan to ever win a national championship at Alabama. But there's every chance, and now that with the fix coming in, you know, you'd love to know which member of the officiating crew had the under on the Big 12 championship. Not exactly a high scoring affair, but they literally had to put a second back on the clock so Texas could go and I'm sorry, I'm not trying to offend the Texas fans. I mean, you watched the game, you know the fix was in. That was disgusting. But I tell you what, if there's somebody out there to respect, and if there's somebody out there, if a real live, honest to God, in the trenches defensive type is ever going to win the Heisman Trophy, it would be Ndamukong Suh. My God, that young man was amazing. He was beautiful to watch. He took that little Colt McCoy fella. He was falling away from him and took him with one hand and threw Colt McCoy 5 yards. I thought the little sucker was going to go in, was going to go into the second row of seats. That young man is strong. And what? Never even played football till he was like 15, 16 years old. And somebody said, son, have you ever played football? And he's just brilliant to watch. Plays for Nebraska. Best defensive lineman in the country. Probably for years. That's how good he is. But, you know, enough of that. If you're in the chat room, I think Texas Betsy has posted the Tim Tebow poster or the link to it. Let's look this up. I mean, what a manifestation of ego. Just so you can understand fully, and I'm not trying to be a jerk here, but just so you can understand thoroughly the mind and the ego of a wingnut. His eye black, you know, he always put a Bible verse on his eye black, Tim Tebow did. And this past Saturday, it was John 16:33. And the King James Version, which I'm sure is what Tim reads, him being a fundy and all, you know, they think that God actually wrote in Elizabethan English, never mind the Hebrew, the Aramaic, or the ancient Koine Greek. Tim Tebow's eye black said, "These things I have spoken unto you, that in me ye might have peace. In the world ye shall have tribulation. But be of good cheer. I have overcome the world." It's not Tim Tebow talking about Jesus. That's what Tim Tebow thinks of Tim Tebow. I have overcome the world. Ooh. You know, just ooh. And I was talking about working as a young 17-year-old disc jockey the night that John Lennon was shot and hearing the teletype. I haven't heard this. I got to work on that. I got to have some way to play stuff in queue or something. Sue said, "We'll never know what you heard at the studio the night Lennon was shot because those machines aren't used anymore. Is this audio snippet I found online close? Well, let's find out." That's exactly it. The thing was every bit, it probably weighed 2,000 pounds. The body and the frame of the thing was cast iron. It was probably about 4 feet tall. It used the teletype paper that was yellow in color, and it came on great big rolls. And just loading the paper was a pain in the butt. But the ribbon, oh, the ribbon you don't want any part of. Yuck. You know. So, yeah, that is what it sounded like. And those bells just went on and on and on. And I thought, my God, they've launched. And I walked into that room, and I saw those headlines. John Lennon shot. Assassination attempt. John Lennon. John Lennon transported to hospital. And then eventually John Lennon dead. Mm-mm-mm. So, yeah, we'll play a little John Lennon tribute music tonight. Because he is most assuredly missed. So we're about halfway through the program for this Tuesday evening. Light them up. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. They all ring the same way right here. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. Easy, 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 easy. We'll take a little break. We'll check out the Green News Report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You are listening to radio like none other. You're listening to the horn.
Picture yourself in a boat on a river with tangerine trees and marmalade skies. Somebody calls you, you answer quite slowly. A girl with kaleidoscope eyes. Bye. people eat marshmallow pie. Everyone smiles as you drift past the flowers that grow so incredibly high. Newspaper taxis appear on the shore, waiting to take you. Plasticine porters with looking glass ties. Suddenly someone is there at the turnstile, the girl with the lighters go by. Lucy in the sky with stars. Lucy in the sky with stars. Lucy.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, December 8, 2009.
Welcome to Copenhagen.
The stakes are high as nations of the world meet to address global climate change. Plus, more hot air over hacked and stolen emails.
All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of green news and politics and snarky comments.
This is terrorism. This is jihadism, environmental jihadism.
Terrorism? Hyperbole much, Rush? This is your Green News Report. The Green News Report is brought to you by VelvetRevolution.us, now offering a $200,000 reward for information leading to the arrest and conviction of U.S. Chamber of Commerce CEO Tom Donahue for fraud and other crimes. Demand an investigation and accountability for the Chamber's irresponsible behavior on global warming and so much more. Sign the petition at StopTheChamber.com. That's StopTheChamber.com. Okay, Des? Copenhagen is finally underway.
Yes, as you may have heard, there's a little meeting in Copenhagen going on where delegates from 192 nations are negotiating a successor to the Kyoto Protocol to reduce the world's emissions of greenhouse gases from human activities that scientists say are leading to dangerous global temperature rise. Here's Danish Prime Minister Lars Løkke Rasmussen.
Global warming knows no borders. It does not discriminate. It affects us all. And we are here today because we are all committed to take action.
There are essentially three components to the negotiations: establishing targets for reductions, how those reductions will be measured, and allocating funding for developing nations to adapt to changes expected to come along with climate change, along with technology to help them reduce their own emissions without stifling economic growth, as outlined by UN Climate Chief Ivo de Boer.
In the week ahead, the focus needs to be on crafting solid and practical proposals that will unleash prompt action on mitigation, adaptation, finance, technology, and capacity building.
President Obama will attend the conference, but the timing of his visit has been changed to the end of the summit, a change that environmental groups say is important because the end of the conference is when agreements will be finalized and other major world leaders will be attending.
And, of course, that's when he can show up and declare that he is enslaving the entire nation, the entire globe, frankly, as we've seen now reported on the so-called news outlets. Yesterday alone, I was looking at the CNN, their morning show. They had four clips up online. We've got this huge summit in Copenhagen for the first time going to deal with some of these real global climate change issues. And their headlines, four of them on this conference, were Cloud Over Climate Summit, How Skeptics Battle Climate Theory, Climate Change Questioned, and Will Emails Affect Summit? Not exactly substantive, but the right wing, the corporatists, the lobbyists have certainly sucked out the carbon dioxide, if you will, from the start of this conference.
And interestingly, not a word about what's actually going on at the conference.
Exactly.
During today's negotiations, the European Union criticized the proposed commitment of the U.S. to cut emissions 17% from 2005 levels as too low. That amounts to only 4% from 1990 levels, and the EU is committing to a 20% cut from 1990 levels. China, now the world's largest emitter overall, and India, have both committed to tie their emissions reductions to a percentage of economic output. It's called their carbon intensity. But critics point out that isn't much, since economic growth in both countries is expected to skyrocket in the next few years, and it could actually lead to increased emissions.
Well, you know, I think that's the untold story here, is that even if they are successful at this summit, and nobody knows if they will be, the fact is any agreement they come to will probably be much less than really needs to be done, according to what the scientists are telling us.
However, the critics do point out that this is the first time ever that the two biggest emitters, China and the U.S., have ever committed to specific targets.
So you think
that's a good sign?
This may make a difference this time.
The nations gathered at Copenhagen have all agreed at the outset to reach a politically binding agreement to reduce emissions, which means they have committed to signing an agreement in further negotiations in coming months that will be legally binding. Plus, it's also important to note that any international treaty must be still ratified by governments and individual countries. In the U.S., the Constitution requires U.S. Senate approval, where it faces an uphill battle.
Indeed, because as folks may not understand, our Constitution actually takes treaties such as these, once they're ratified, as the law of the land.
It's also important to note that the U.S. and the international community have successfully negotiated global climate treaties before. 20 years ago, the U.S. signed the Montreal Protocol, which successfully banned ozone-depleting chemicals and saved the ozone layer. We also successfully solved the problem of acid rain from coal-fired power plants through an international treaty that used a cap-and-trade system. Both times, industry claimed such agreements would damage the economy, but both times, actual costs were much lower than original estimates.
There ain't nothing new about cap-and-trade. This has been going on, and it has been working in years past as supported by Republicans, even when Fox News wasn't out there telling their sycophantic listeners that this is somehow world enslavement. We will be following Copenhagen in the next 2 weeks. Hope you'll follow it with us here at the Green News Report on our website, greennews.bradblog.com, via Twitter or iTunes. And despite what Rush Limbaugh tells you, no, this isn't environmental jihadism. It's just the news. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your terrorist-free Green News Report.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere around the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95? Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit CityNet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Here I stand, head in hand, turn my face to the wall. If she's gone, I can't go on, feeling 2 foot small. Everywhere people stand, each and every day, I can see them laugh at me, and I hear them say, hey, you've got to hide your love away. Hey, you've got to hide your love away. How can I even try? She said to me, love will find a way. Gather round all you clowns, let me hear you say, hey, you've got to hide your love away. Hey, you've got to hide.
Just love that. Just love that. 12 minutes before the hour, an hour and 12 minutes left in the program. I'm Bob, of course. This is Head On. And light up the phones if you want to. We'll get there presently. But just a couple of things that I absolutely want to make sure that I do get to before the program ends this evening. There was a signal moment in Ohio today. Yes, by George, we've found another way to murder human beings in the name of the state. Big doings, as an Ohio inmate who was convicted of killing and dismembering a 22-year-old woman in 1991 was executed today. And by golly, they used some new technology. They use a brand new, untested, one-drug method of lethal injection, otherwise known as horizontal crucifixion. You've seen the table, right? You know, dude's laid out, he's on his back, and his arms are strapped out. It's a crucifixion, it's just taking place horizontally, it's not vertical. No nails doesn't make it any less of a crucifixion. So, as it turns out, Kenneth Biros, 51 years old, was horizontally crucified at 11:47 a.m. today, Eastern Standard Time, in Lucasville, Ohio, with a whopping big dose of sodium thiopental. Now, that's usually the first drug used at a lower dosage in the three-drug method of state-sponsored murder. But Ohio, this man was involved in a lawsuit that said that three-drug method constituted cruel and inhuman punishment, cruel and unusual punishment. And, of course, he was right, because the death penalty is cruel and unusual punishment. It might not have been unusual when the Constitution was drafted, but, you know, we like to think we're getting a little bit more enlightened, although that is certainly open to debate. But they offed him. Yes, 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 the people of Ohio can sleep a little bit more soundly tonight because Kenneth Biros has been killed. He has been killed for what he did to a 22-year-old woman who certainly didn't have it coming. Her name was Tammy Engstrom. They're near Warren, Ohio. Biros killed her, met her at a bar, offered to drive her home, and then robbed, attempted to rape her, and then cut her into pieces. And scattered her pieces around northeast Ohio and neighboring Pennsylvania. There were, according to the examiner's report, 91 premortem wounds. He was, Biros claimed, acting in a fit of drunken rage. Wow, what a jerk. What a murderous, homicidal, broken human being he was. Now, having been murdered in the name of the people of the state of Ohio, a miracle took place as Tammy Engstrom came back to life. No, she didn't. Remarking on the minutes of the parole board stated with regard to Miss Engstrom's mother, since her daughter's death, she has endured nearly 20 years of constant pain and nightmares. She believes, there's that terrible, terrible, tortured word, she believes that the nightmares will end with the execution. It makes her sick that Biros tortured and brutally murdered her daughter. Brutally murdered. I can't imagine a murder that isn't brutal. Even the murder of Kenneth Biros was brutal. There is no such thing as an unbrutal murder. But we won't have that discussion about the death penalty this evening. No, Tammy Engstrom didn't come back to life, and we find ourselves on the 8th day of December, 2009, in the United States of America, still engaged in that hateful old monotheistic load of crap that is an eye for an eye. And we all remember that with an eye for an eye, eventually, the world goes blind. Kenneth Biros's last meal, always remarked upon in these kinds of stories, was served at about 7:45 p.m. Monday. He did not get breakfast. You know, you want to be NPO. That's nihil per os, nothing by mouth. You want to be NPO for your execution, and just in case they would need to do surgery, something went wrong and they need to do surgery to revive you so they could re-kill you. You want to be NPO for your execution. But he did have his last meal, 7:45 p.m. Monday evening. He had pizza with extra cheese, mushrooms, onions, and green peppers, along with onion rings, deep-fried mushrooms, Doritos, French onion dip, blueberry ice cream, Dr. Pepper, and cherry pie. Man, they treat them right in Lucasville, Ohio, when they're getting ready to dust them, don't they? But apparently Biros was content with his going. He did have some final words. According to the Department of Rehabilitation and Correction, by God, he certainly got rehabilitated and corrected, didn't he? Julie Walburn, whom one wonders how she can do the job and then go home at night and not just stand screaming at herself or at her reflection in the mirror, but we'll leave that for another day. Julie Walburn said Kenneth Biros' final words were, and I quote, "Sorry from the bottom of my heart. I want to thank all of my family and friends for my prayers and who supported and believed in me. My father, now I'm being paroled to heaven. I will now spend all of my holidays with my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Peace be with you all. Amen." And, of course, if you follow Christian doctrine, you know that Kenneth Biros is now, having repented of his ways, in the loving bosom of Jesus Christ in heaven. Right? Yeah. He's right there with Adolf Hitler. And because, you know, he was baptized into the church, so eventually Hitler gets out of purgatory or something and gets to go to heaven. Sure he is. He's right there with him. Right there next to Jesus. Right there next to his victim, Tammy Engstrom. And, you know, they're just probably just, Kenneth and Tammy just talking it over. You know, that was a really bad night. Oh, I know. But we're all right here with Jesus now, so it's so much better. You know, Jerry Falwell's there. Yes, sirree. George Wallace is there. Mm-hmm. Strom Thurmond's there. Jesse Helms is there. They're all just right there, just snuggled right up to Jesus, just happy as peas in a pod. But you know who's not going to be there and who isn't there? Because it's been recently pronounced by the Holy Roman Catholic Church. A leading Roman Catholic cardinal said last week, namely Cardinal Javier Lozano Barragan, said that the church regards homosexuality as an insult to God. That's a quote, an insult to God. And then went on to say, and any of you gay people or transsexuals out there who were planning on going to heaven and hanging out with Kenneth Biros or Adolf Hitler or Jerry Falwell or any of those really, really good Christian people, you're not going. Sorry. Hate to break it to you. Because Cardinal Javier Lozano Barragan said transsexuals and homosexuals will never enter the kingdom of heaven, and it is not me who says this, but St. Paul. So apparently St. Paul now officially trumps the creator of the freaking universe. Amazing, isn't it? Cardinal Javier Lozano Barragan also went ahead and said, people are not born a homosexual. They become homosexual for different reasons. Education issues or because they did not develop their own identity during adolescence. It may not be their fault, but acting against nature and the dignity of the human body is an insult to God. Well, for my part, I would just like to offer a little indignity to Cardinal Javier Lozano Barragan and tell him that he can kiss my white ass. Okay? Just saying. By the way, he's not just some rogue cardinal wandering around out there hating gay people and transsexuals. You know, transsexuals, the people that God made a mistake in creating. Perfect God, incapable of mistakes, God. Yeah, God made a mistake in creating them because he created them gender confused. Yeah, that God. But he's not just some rogue cardinal flapping about in his little red robes. He is the retired head of the Vatican's Council. Oh, this is going to be tough to get past. He is the retired head of the Vatican's Council for Pastoral Assistance to Healthcare Workers. Now, having said all that about how all the queers and the lesbians and the drag queens ain't getting into no heaven with him, by God. He went on to say, he's a tolerant fellow, Cardinal Barragan. He is just absolutely overflowing with the love of the love that is born of salvation from the Prince of Peace. And he said, homosexuality is therefore a sin, but this does not justify any form of discrimination. God alone has the right to judge. But apparently, according to Cardinal Barragan, God alone only has the right to judge, but he has to do it according to criteria established by Saul of Tarsus, a tent maker who probably had his brains rotted by the tent fumes he was working around. Cardinal Barragan went on to say, we on earth cannot condemn, and as human beings, we all have the same rights. Except for that going to heaven part. Yeah, this is the same church who was cited during the Nelson Hatch Amendment debate today. The U.S. Council of Catholic Bishops, who have again injected their weird bigotry into the healthcare process, insisting. That they, a bunch of men, some of whom have probably had sex with little boys, have the right to dictate to the rest of the citizenry of the United States of America, and particularly the female citizenry thereof, that they have the right to dictate what a woman will and will not do with her entirely too human body. So, you know, I guess there's not a lot of fun to be said for going to hell and all. but at least you're not going to be going to heaven with a pope who used to be a member of the Hitler Youth and manned an anti-aircraft gun. You won't be going to a heaven that's got Jerry Falwell in it. You won't be going to a heaven that has Adolf Hitler in it. So, as Bill Murray says in Caddyshack, you've got that going for you, which is good. Jesus Christ, save me from your followers. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, Brian, what's up?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Okay, I just wanted to get at you what you just talked about, the execution. That guy sounds like a monster that was, but I still say he was probably monstrously put to death.
That's the thing, yeah. There's lots of broken human beings out there, Brian.
Absolutely.
But that doesn't mean we take them out and kill them. We put them away where they can't hurt people anymore.
According to corporations and right-wingers and profit-driven libertarians, liberticidal libertarians, and those are people that inspired the so-called thinking of Arnold Schwarzenegger, Ronald Reagan, George W. Bush. According to people like that and their murderous economic tactics and strategies, somebody who's not a productive unit of economic measure, an individual unit of economic measure, that's how libertarians and right-wing Republicans especially look at individual American citizens. We're citizens, we're not consumers, we're citizens, before we're consumers. But according to them, there's a lot of us that they'd like to off. And not just the murderer there, the guy in Ohio. But talking about botched executions there, from October 19th, Common Dreams piece there by Lucille Melendane. She's from Agents France Press. Naturally, she's too civilized for Americans to want to read it.
Entirely right, yes.
The evil French, you know, they had enough of World War One, and so they were basically overrun, and the Germans made through June Ardennes offensive there that took Paris, but the French did take over 150,000 casualties trying to fight off the German blitzkrieg tactics there and strategies. But it's from the France, so we have to keep that in mind. Screams, the title of this piece by Lucille Melendane is Screams, Flames Among Horrors of Botched U.S. Executions. Just a quick couple of quotes here. We put animals to death more humanely, reporter Carla McLean said of a 1992 execution she witnessed, in which Donald Eugene Harding writhed and thrashed in an Arizona gas chamber for over 10 minutes before dying. Many of those executed in the United States in the last 25 years were not so, suffered through execution in which flesh caught on fire, blood saturated shirts, and witnesses watched and listened as the condemned convulsed and screamed with pain. In 1999, Florida Supreme Court Justice Leander Shaw reacted with horror to pictures of Alan Lee Davis, who was put to death by electric chair. The color photos of Davis depict a man who, for all appearances, was brutally tortured to death by the citizens of Florida, Justice Shaw said. Davis had been strapped into an electric chair especially designed to fit his 350-pound frame. As he was electrocuted, but before he was pronounced dead, blood poured from his mouth, soaking his white shirt and oozing through the buckle holes of the strap holding him down. Michael Reitelet, a professor at the University of Colorado, working with the Death Penalty Information Center, is to collect testimony on more than 40 botched instances from the witnesses required to be present at executions. And it just goes on to talk about horror stories have emerged. And folks, just go to commondreams.org in their archive section there and look, and punch in October 2009, and you'll find this piece by Lucille Melendane about the botched executions. I've got that hanging on my wall here, my bulletin board. I know it's God love the young woman, her mother. I know what she's talking about. This, if that man is still allowed to live, that tortured her beloved daughter to death. There's some kind of haunting feeling that remains with the human being. You wouldn't be human if you didn't have those feelings. It's part of our, maybe that's our fight or flight response there, the reptilian brain. But whatever it is, it's a normal and justifiable human response. Still, I say that even a monster like this, that's why I believe prison guards, especially maximum security prisons, should get the highest union wages for having to guard these monsters. But at the same time, I don't believe in the death penalty.
Yeah, and those and Brian, those same prison guards should probably have a yogi and a Zen master on standby at all times.
Absolutely, even a policeman serving in a high crime area probably does not fight. because they meet a lot of good people too, a lot of good humanitarian people in their daily, you know, shift there, or guarding the streets of a, you know, inner city, or it could be a high crime rural suburban area in today's post George W. Bush America. It could be anywhere in this country nowadays, where violence is such an infesting force. But the prison guards that have to guard these people, I believe they should be making six-figure salary, far more than the corporations that are that privatizing our prison industrial prison industrial complex system.
Right.
More of these,
and you know, maybe somewhere along the way, if we ever have that little jolt of enlightenment in this country that has from time to time come to other countries, but apparently not us.
Yeah.
We might want to take a hard look, Brian, at who we are putting into this prison industrial complex. A monster like Kenneth Biros? Yes, absolutely yes. He needs to be somewhere where he cannot harm any other human being again, and in which he can contemplate, meditate, cogitate upon the horrors of what he did for as long as his life is in him. And you know, I understand.
High security situation, very much a
absolutely
very much regimented situation where he has certain basic human freedoms. You give him a few books to read. How is that going to make him? You know, isn't that part of being a basically? We have to keep our own honor as a people, as the American people. This goes back to 19th century America. They started prison reform. And yet we still have gone back to, I think we want to go back to 14th century medieval Europe burning
well,
witches.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah,
yes, absolutely, Brian.
That's what media want. And they would, you know, the Glenn Becks and the rest of the world, they would want to skewer this, you know, they wouldn't want to hear anything about the torturous executions that have gone on. And often, there's been hundreds, in the 20th century alone, there have been at least hundreds of innocent people executed in America. From 1900 to 1999 or 2000 AD, they really have, we're not such a perfect nation where, okay, our justice system was probably better than the Soviet Union's at the height of Stalin and all that. Of course it was better than that. But still, many innocent people, because of their impoverished circumstances or their race, especially because of those two circumstances, they were often railroaded into the gas chamber eventually. Even they were railroaded into an unjust death penalty of whatever sort it is. Yeah, and I agree with you. Death by injection is still a torturous way. It kills a human being slowly but surely, but torturously as well. I was talking about the Copenhagen summit.
Yes.
Yeah, I know Naomi Klein is there. She's telling people to get out there, be active, and I think that's a great thing. By a piece in the New York Times on Sunday by Jared Diamond. He wrote the book Guns, Germs, and Steel, and Collapse.
Yeah, he's a brilliant scientist.
I haven't read Collapse yet. I haven't gotten around to that. But His piece there in Common Dreams, they pilloried this piece too there, where he's saying his op-ed contribution piece there of Sunday by Jared Diamond is, "Will Big Business Save the Earth?" And I think he makes some important points here, like, you know, that Walmart is working to double the fuel efficiency of its truck fleet by 2015, thereby saving $200 million a year at the pump. You know, that's good for the economy, it's good for the environment, that's good for Walmart too. Among the efficient prototypes now being tested are trucks that burn biofuels generated from waste grease at Walmart's delis. Similarly,
yeah,
the country's biggest private user of electricity, Walmart, is saving money by decreasing store energy use. Another Walmart example involves lowering costs associated with packaging materials. Walmart now sells only concentrated liquid laundry detergent in North America, which has reduced the size of packaging by up to 50%. And Walmart stores also have machines called balers that recycle plastics that once would have been discarded. Walmart's eventual goal is to end up with no packaging waste. And when you're as huge as Walmart, you do have your own infrastructure to make this kind of thing possible. At the same time, I know the individual citizen has an effect when we recycle things and we put in the new CFR light bulbs, that kind of thing. But it does, the corporations are going to have to join in too. But still, Jared Diamond's piece, he seems to be, he's more concerned with Chevron's you know, their feelings of what they had to go
through. Well, and you know, I was gonna bring that up, Brian, because toward the end okay. of Collapse, he uses Chevron as a model of a good corporate citizen operating in the so-called third world.
Okay, and they talked about the Chevron managed oil fields in Papua New Guinea.
Right.
And that they since sold their stake in that, but they apparently. But in this, he seems to be talking. He's more concerned with Coca-Cola's, profit line problems and their corporate charter and Chevron's corporate charter than he is about the average citizen, whether it's in West Virginia or New Hampshire or Arizona or Papua New Guinea or name it anywhere. That the oil fields of the Gulf states in Saudi Arabia, wherever it is, the corporations they continue. To take their word on anything where they say they're going to be less polluting is beyond me. I don't believe we can trust these corporations on such a matter. They can only do it if it's good for them too. It's like in the public healthcare bill there, Bob. That now the corporations, some of the private healthcare, they want to get behind the latest so-called public option, and now that it's going to be kind of a. The Blue Cross Blue Shield and Kaiser Permanente are going to be factored in to the kind of a public option. And something you were saying, that they should lower the Social Security retirement age to 55. They may try to. Jay Rockefeller, your own senator there from West Virginia, wants to possibly lower the Medicare eligible age down to 55.
Yes.
And
there have been articles in this state, Brian, that suggest that would save this state in terms of Medicaid outlays fortunes.
That's right. And also, but it would save, in the long term, the people that are right now that are trying somehow to pay the private health care system, eventually where they don't have to pay that private corporate tax, I would call it, for overcharging profiteering health care corporations. The over money, too, it would save the average American citizen and consumer over time. And what they're talking about, also, the private corporations, the private health plans, they want to see the government run more, the government get back into more the research and, you know, and those kind of things, in those areas and you know, for as far as for health care and actual preventative health care, they want to see the, and I see the same thing in the Jared's piece there, Jared Diamond's piece, that they want the government, the private corporation want the government to get into the plans for investing in green research, offer tax incentives to corporations too. But what they want is, if it follows the healthcare history of healthcare research in this country, they want to steal all the ideas of research from the government-sponsored, taxpayer-funded researchers and universities and et cetera, and foundations, et cetera, and use that. You know, have the government takes those costs, the taxpayer takes over those costs. But only the profits go eventually to the corporations, the private healthcare corporations, the private oil corporations, energy corporations. That they still want, you know, Uncle Sam to take over the research in the green areas of a green economy or the areas of preventative healthcare and the latest pharmaceuticals, et cetera. And that they still don't want to pay those costs. These are still like slippery car salesmen. I shouldn't insult slippery car salesmen that way. What I'm saying is I still don't trust that they're going to really be, that big business is not going to save the earth in the end. They're going to have to be dragged, kicking, and screaming into doing so. I believe, you know, corporation charters, I'm not really that keen, you know, I'm not, my reasoning skills, they don't really cover too much. I know that, is it the quarterly profit motive that is what drives most corporations in their daily practices, Bob, or is that what it is for the?
It has to be. That is their stockholders. That is the only obligation that a corporation has is to make money.
That profit motive can never gel with real health care. Then, you know, with what my beloved sister, that she's been a lifelong nurse, and the people that are actually on the front lines of taking care of American citizens and their health care, doctors, nurses, and the actual staff at our hospital administration and the people there, whatever, the janitors there, whatever, that are part of that overall system there that try to heal people, those people are the ones that should be the only ones profiting, you know, getting from health care, you know, getting a, you know, doctors, they train for years in medical school. Nurses do too as well, but they don't realize that the amount of care. And most of the hands-on care of the patient, I believe, still goes to the, it falls, that burden still falls upon the nurses. And these are the people that are...
Yeah, in fact, the healthcare system, as I experience it now...
...not enter into their daily schedule.
No, it doesn't. It only intrudes yeah. When the care provider, and you're very correct, Brian. There's a hierarchy at work here. The most caregiving is done probably by so-called CNAs, certified nursing assistants.
Right.
Then the next step up is the LPNs, the licensed practical nurses. Then come the RNs. Then come the certified nurse practitioners. Then come the physician's assistants. And then comes the physician himself. It's all a very, what's the best way to describe it? It's sort of a Byzantine.
It's watered down by the profit motive.
It absolutely is. And what happens is when all that chain of reporting about a patient's needs, gels on the desk of the doctor, and the doctor makes a decision about what the best approach to care is for the patient, that's when the profit motive intrudes.
Yeah, that's what the corporate mode and model is so destroyed on so many fronts and parts of our economy, the economy, the daily life of Americans. That's where it to put another allegory to it. That's the, like looking at the business model or the corporate model. Say it's a lawyer. And he's looking at what are the legal rights of the patient. If we had to go through that for each and every patient that a doctor has to see, and they have to. But they do,
and it's called informed consent, Brian.
Informed consent. Okay, but say we're going to ramp it up even more to give the Bar Association even more of an income-producing possibility, where the patient gets his own lawyer before he even goes into the hospital for his health care, and the lawyer has to go over each and every pill that's prescribed and each and every treatment that the doctor gives to the patient, and then he goes over it in his legal documents and looks over the legal code for that state and the federal code for America, and what are the patient's rights, and what are the, does it match the legal codes, and we're going to see whether this patient is legally eligible for this care and legally, you know, it's within his legal rights. As a former citizen now in corporate America, but is it within his legal rights for him? Are they being respected for him to get this care? And when a lawyer looks at a medical patient and their health care needs, when he looks at it as a legal document, he's looking at it coldly and in a legal sense, in a judicious sense. He's reasoning through, but in a very much a cold scientific sense in terms of criminal, well, legal justice sense, however, whatever the term is, I don't know the exact.
Right, and what you're describing,
so
Brian.
In private insurance, gatekeeper is doing the same thing.
Well, exactly. That's the whole thing. You know, when the right wing was screaming about death panels, you know, there's every time the right wing opens their mouth, Brian, they spew out nothing but irony. Because when they were talking about death panels, lo and behold, what they were talking about were the decisions that are made on an annual basis inside inside the boardrooms of the corporate for-profit healthcare industry. That's why I have argued, and I try to distill it a little bit, Brian, that's why I've argued for so long that there are just some things within the realm of human existence which are not appropriate vehicles for the profit motive.
That's right. That's right. And healthcare has got to be one of the history of the last 20 or 30 years in America has got to, any sane person, I would say, has got to know that from the last history of the 20 or 30 years in American culture. And I just, it gets back to the same, I still say it's, you know, they have this Ron Paul out there saying there's a libertarian, he's different from the Republicans, and he's going to, maybe he wants a non-interventionist policy. But his Ayn Rand and Ron Paul and Alan Greenspan was an Ayn Rand fanatic. Again, I say look at Greenspan's Fraud, the book by the economist Ravi Batra, and there's a couple of books coming out now, Ayn Rand and the World She Made by Ann Heller, and The Goddess of the Marketplace, Ayn Rand. I believe that Jennifer Burns is the one that wrote that book. I'm going to get those after the holidays. But the fact is, that these long going back to at least the 70s, Ronald Reagan and Arnold Schwarzenegger too were heavily influenced by Ayn Rand and Milton Friedman and the small government nonsense. Is social Darwinism, survival of the fittest, it comes down to, and they look at you know, Ayn Rand was, if you look at the history of this woman, she was born, her name was, in 1905 in Russia, her name was Alisa Zinovina Rosenbaum, born to Jewish parents in 1905 Russia. Ayn Rand left Russia in 1926 for America and founded her anti-collectivist philosophy, objectivism, a philosophy of free market capitalism and the pursuit of self-interest as a moral good. It goes on from there. It talks about her. She was a depressive, pill-taking, chain-smoking, and this kind of thing. She was manipulative, and she was very temperamental. But I'm going by her writing. I think she's so. I don't call it philosophy. Her writing, you could call it maybe you can the farthest sense of the word economic philosophy. But it's so tuned to selfishness as an ideal. You know,
for me, I just call it, because I've read a bunch of it, and my brain still has the bruises.
Yeah.
But I just call it proto-fascist science fiction.
Yes, that's what it's the same type of corporate model. That's what I say. It's that same corporate model is what drove Albert Speer, who was the economic czar of Adolf Hitler. His corporatist thinking that the big German corporations were making tons of money during the Nazi Reich in Germany and in Europe from 1933 to 1945. They were just profiting to insane profits from slave labor, from death camp labor, et cetera. You take the corporate model where you don't regulated at all. That's what Ron Paul wants. He thinks too much regulation is what caused the bank meltdown in late 2008, and that it's gone on to this today.
And how can you think that and not just have something fundamentally wrong with your brain?
For 8 full years, they had this George W. Bush, his non-acting Securities and Exchange Commission, that's the main gist of where the problems come from. Bill Clinton, he did sign that, what is it, the 1999, that the act that made that abolished the Glass-Steagall Act there, but and Phil Graham, the senator from, I think he barely had a fifth grade education, if that, Phil Graham. But I don't want to insult people out there that are good people that have fifth grade education. But Phil Graham is a venal type of politician, and he got some say Clinton knew what he was signing when he signed that. Others say he didn't. But if we continue with the Clinton policy, which meant basically the duly elected Al Gore administration. From January 20th, 2001 onward, he would have spotted these clowns that like the Madoff and all the rest of them, and the war profiteers too, wouldn't have gotten in the door nearly as much as they did during the King George W. Bush reign. And they would have spotted this, they would have cut this off at that's what even Tim Geithner, even though I disagree with him and his economic policies and Lawrence Summers, but he said that to the Republican representative there, that guy Brady from Texas, that lunatic. That he said to him, you know, we had 8 years of an administration that did not police or regulate Wall Street, sir. You know, that's what Tim Geithner said, and he was right about that. The Al Gore administration would never have allowed things to get this bad. He would never have laughed at all the profits that were being made and all the law of the jungle, the corporate jungle. That's the kind of thing that an Ayn Rand and a Ronald Reagan and a Ron Paul and an Alan Greenspan, who gave us our biggest tax increase in the history of Social Security wage FICA tax increase in 1983. He was hired by Ronald Reagan specifically because he admired him and his libertarian leanings and his following Ayn Rand. And that's what caused the greatest tax increase in all American history. And yet the Social Security annual surpluses are still being robbed, mainly by they set it up with the 9/11 attacks, I believe, to rob the Social Security annual surpluses for his emergency and his wars. George W. Bush Jr. did, and his father did it before him. But Bill Clinton, the last 2 years, under the Clinton economic plan, they did not have to touch a penny of the Social Security annual surplus amounts. And for the baby boomers out there, they should realize, you know, you look at things like this Medicare and retirement and having a safe retirement, some kind of living income as a right as a citizen, you can see that it worked. The Social Security is the most successful insurance plan in human history. And yet at the same time, you know, Alan Greenspan gets to play both sides of it, the biggest tax increase, and yet he's a libertarian against taxes. That's what, and then he's the head of the Federal Reserve. It's horribly corrupt, the Federal Reserve. I believe it needs policing. I didn't need Ron Paul to tell me that. I only needed to have the duly elected man named Al Gore be president back in 2001.
Oh, here.
All this. But I didn't mean to rant on like this. I just, what you're saying about the death penalty, It's right on, Bob. We just, this prison industrial complex is every bit as evil as the war profiteers complex. And the one other thing, opednews.com, it's got a thing about, you know, that we still have Vietnamese peasants talk about the corporations, Dow Chemical and Agent Orange that they sprayed there. Decades later, they're still, their lives are being cut off and they're still dying. The lives are being shortened by the toxicity of the Agent Orange that was sprayed there. The Vietnamese peasants are. They're still pleading with America to get some kind of settlement on this issue.
Oh, sure. Just like the people of Bhopal are still pleading for justice.
There you go.
With, you know, Union Carbide or Dow Chemical. And you know what? But that is the nature of the arrogance of empire, Brian.
Yeah, that's part of it too. American hubris is a part of that as well.
And the way American corporate empire responds is, do you have the power to bomb us? Well, no. Then, you know, piss off.
Because our military is working for them. Any young person that considers the military, I try to persuade them away from that. But also, talking about the depleted uranium now is the new Agent Orange of today, but it's even more deadly and insidious. A piece, December 6th, this is from Sunday, also in the opednews.com, Rob Call's great website, Global Connections in the Arc of War by Susan Gallimore, and it talks about Alameda, California. It shows a picture of a deformed birth defect young child there, and we talk about the monstrosities of war. That I hate to put in those terms, but that's the truth.
It is, yes, it is the truth.
Yeah, that's what John Kerry spoke about, the monstrosity, the monster that is war, about the deformed, physically deformed from the trenches of World War One, a French veteran there, and how he was trying to dissuade American, his own French people there from, well, there were French fascist parties there too between the World War One and World War Two. He was trying to dissuade them away from war, away from the right-wing fascist nationalism, which any country can be prone to. But it shows this poor little baby there, and it just Alameda, California was once home to one of the largest naval air stations in the world, with 271 separate and distinct trades to manufacture and repair every part of any aircraft. Vast quantities of chemicals went into this work, including solvents, aviation fuel, and radium-based paints for cockpit dials. Leaks and spills were as common as they are in any operation of this magnitude. Rags, brushes, and cleaning supplies were regularly replaced. The worn-out burned-in pits, that's like they're burning the toxic waste and the weapons in Iraq right now in burn pits. Burned-in pits located at the northern tip of the naval base. Enough chemicals were mishandled or leaked out of containers and sewer pipes that the former base is today a Superfund EPA toxic waste cleanup site. It goes on from there. You can read the piece there by Miss Gallimore, but there are more than 40,000 toxic sites in the U.S. and its territories, approximately 1,000 of which are on the national priority list, and for which federal cleanup funding is forthcoming. Naturally, the corporations that got all this government funding to make these weapons and all this, the naval weapons and the Air Force jets and all that, and all this weaponry, they don't have to pay for any of this cleanup. But approximately 1,000 of which are on the national priority list for which federal cleanup funding is forthcoming. Certainly the financial costs of cleanups are considerable, but what of the moral and ethical cost? Just as each taxpaying American is implicated in the wars our country wages, so too are we implicated in the human and environmental damage. And it goes on, there's so much more evidence, but this is a good article. An attorney for the Vietnamese plaintiffs about Agent Orange says, it is unfortunate that U.S. courts have chosen, contrary to U.S. and international law, to deny justice to millions of Vietnamese who suffer from the spraying of dioxin-laden Agent Orange, which has left several generations of victims severely sick and disabled, end quote. It goes on from there, but it just, I don't agree with, obviously, with Mr. Diamond, Professor Diamond there, that big business will not save the earth, Bob. Unless it's much more policed.
No, but
maybe under Dennis Kucinich's presidency, that kind of, and more progressive Democrats in the Congress, that kind of properly policed big business and corporate world, that could possibly help to save the world. In their own interest as well too. I don't want to.
And I think you're right. No, they're not going to. No, big business will not single-handedly save anything, except
their
perhaps. Their bottom line. However, when they realize that, just as with anything in this country, remember what Calvin Coolidge said: the business of America is business.
And I don't want to destroy.
No. But the fact of the matter is, when American business realizes that there is a honking boatload of money to be made in going green,
yeah,
then they will be as green as grass.
And you're right about that, Bob. And why don't they simply informed American public and the so-called news media, the national television, should be bringing that word out to them? Why does it, you know, is someone, we have the progressive radio hosts like Bob Kincaid and Mike Malloy that bring this simple fact out to the world every day. But the national news media, they're in violation of the Fourth, the Fourth Amendment or the First Amendment, really, that the freedom of the press is supposed to have special freedoms to make sure the American citizenry remains, are in the,
what you're thinking of is what is traditionally referred to as the Fourth Estate.
Fourth Estate, I'm sorry.
No. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Now, you ask why not? You know, some of these things are happening slowly, and they're happening behind the scenes, and it's just not sexy enough to get reported on in the for-profit media. You know, I just went looking for a story about something that you reminded me of, and it came up, and lo and behold, it's the story I was looking for, and it's over at Huffington Post. But down the sidebar next to this very important story, okay? And when we're done talking, I'm gonna go to it. But just so you'll know, down the sidebar on this story are the following: most popular on Huffington Post, and this is not a criticism of Huffington Post, okay? But most popular on Huffington Post, number one, Mindy Lawton, Tiger Woods' alleged mistress. Tiger is da da da. Palin's father, she left Hawaii because Asians made her uncomfortable. Number three, Lindsay Lohan's muse photos, threesomes, all fours, butt, it goes on. Holly Sampson pictures, photos of porn star, Tiger Woods' latest mistress, Adrienne Curry, I love to play World of Warcraft. And we wonder why important stories of for instance, economics?
Yeah.
Or somewhere else on the planet besides the United States never make it into the for-profit media? Well, it's because the people of the United States have been dumbed down, and frankly, remember...
like children.
Yeah, we've been dumbed down to want that sort of sensationalism. And remember, like I said talking to Susan earlier this evening, we've been burning coal for 100 years, and for 100 years we have been deliberately lowering the IQ of the entire planet, and that includes us.
Yeah. And that's it. It gets to the same, like, simple economic knowledge. That's where the American people are—they're being distracted and told to look over there at this Tiger Woods story, or this story about Sarah. What does she think about Asians in Hawaii? Or this story about a woman who should have no bear. You know, they got Kay Bailey Hutchison. You got the Senator Dole's wife there. In South Carolina, there's much better two women there in Maine that are much better qualified Republican woman leaders, Susan Collins and Olympia Snowe, than this immature girl Sarah Palin. But they're covering these celebrities, they are, and yet at the same time they're mostly Republican, but just the government in general, they get away with stealing the Social Security annual surplus amounts into the nearly
right.
$3.7 trillion, and that's the biggest.
But there is, but there is
without representation in American history, I would say, Bob.
But Brian, there is news going on out there. It just isn't being reported very widely. Among other things, consider, if you will, there were more jobs added to the economy. I know adding jobs in the economy in the last year sounds a little bit contradictory, but there were more jobs added in the sustainable energy sector of the economy last year, wind and solar, than were added in the dirty old fossil fuel industry last year, oil, natural gas, and coal. That's important.
That kind of thing needs to be reported every day, Bob.
Last May, the numbers came out, and electricity from coal-fired power plants had dropped to 42%. Now, that doesn't stop the coal liars and the coal mob and the coal mafia and the coal thugs from saying, coal keeps your lights on, and it doesn't keep the paid coal whores in Congress from saying, half of America's electricity comes from coal. No, it doesn't. We are going downward toward a third of it, and we can get it down to zero with a little bit of popular will. But you know what? I've given up on the for-profit media, Brian.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is,
and I didn't even know that fact, Bob, that it's down to 42%. I try to stay informed, but that's what something that needs to be told to the American people, that we are slowly but surely, even if it's not sexy, we are switching over to a green economy, and it needs to be. It, going by what the what I call real science that is available to those people in Copenhagen that has been available to the American people for decades, I think it just needs to be ramped up.
Well, what I think is important here, Brian, is what Van Jones pointed out a while back before he was witch hunted out of the White House by the right wing. He said there is no sense in talking about having a green economy if that green economy is not going to have a social justice component.
Absolutely. Yeah,
and he brought it home so vividly and so brilliantly at PowerShift last March when he said, if we do not have a social justice component to our green economy, then the next wars we fight will be fought by battery-powered tanks wherever it is that there's lithium to build the batteries with.
Yeah, and then people will be fighting just for the next cup of water. You know, they want to privatize water resources.
Sure.
Corporations. You can see what a human being doesn't even have the right to water, let alone health care, to many of these corporations. You can see that why I don't agree with Mr. Diamond, obviously, about big business, Van Jones should have been promoted for what he did by Barack Obama, but I guess that in today's media world that it wasn't about to happen. But I hope he should be, if they had him in charge of all that's going on in Copenhagen right now, I would be very happy.
Indeed.
Good man. I'll let you go. Thanks for putting up with my rant.
Brian, it's always a pleasure, brother. It's always a pleasure.
I love you guys.
All right. You take care, Brian. We'll talk soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye now. One of the things I forgot to mention to Brian, because I know he's a veteran, and I know there are many veterans in the audience. If you want to see what a young veteran back from war who carries a commitment to her country looks like, go over to YouTube and look for, and just do a search for Zoe, Z-O-E, Beavers, B-E-A-V-E-R-S, and look and watch her remarks. And I also put the link up on my Facebook page. If you go and search it and friend up, you can find it. Down my postings there somewhere. But see what she had to say about mountaintop removal. She is eloquent and she is just full of fire. And spoke some incredible truths. Yesterday afternoon down in Charleston. Zoe Beavers, go look over at YouTube. Zoe Beavers. It'll blow you away. It really, really will. Now, going back to something before I go back to the phones, and we do have lines open if you want to jump in for a couple of quick comments, I just want to follow up on something that Brian brought up about just a glaring example of what the profit motive does in America's healthcare system. This is a story about Aetna. A-E-T-N-A, Aetna, the healthcare insurance provider. Next year, Aetna has already, how is this not a chargeable federal criminal conspiracy? How? As of October, Aetna held its third quarter earnings conference call. And they have decided, Aetna has, to force 650,000 of its policyholders out of their coverage. Why are they doing this? It's no secret. They're doing it, they say, to raise additional revenue and meet profit expectations. At this conference call in October, and this is over at Huffington Post, this is the story I was talking to Brian about that has the Lindsay Lohan crap down the side. This is a story by Sam Stein, and it goes back to the 4th of December. Sam Stein at Huffington Post, Aetna forcing 600,000 plus to lose coverage in effort to raise profits. At this third quarter earnings conference call in late October, Sam Stein reports, Aetna said they had to take action because their profits had been less than they had anticipated on the margin for 2009. As a consequence, they have to raise prices on their consumers in 2010 to get that profit margin back in line with what their shareholders need. What does this mean? Well, they've predicted that they will lose between 300,000 and 350,000 members next year from their national account, as well as another 300,000 from smaller group accounts. The chairman and CEO of Aetna is Ron Williams, and he said, "The pricing we put in place for 2009 turned out to not really be what we needed to achieve the results and margins that we'd historically been delivering. We view 2010 as a repositioning year, a year that does not fully reflect the earnings potential of our business. Our pricing actions should have a noticeable effect beginning in the first quarter of 2010, with additional financial impact realized during the remaining three quarters of the year." Let me translate, so as we all can understand, as Phil Harris once said. "We're going to throw a bunch of deadbeat health insurance customers out on the curb, and we don't give a rotten goddamn whether they drop dead tomorrow or the day after, because they are not serving the needs of our insatiable desire to reap profit out of literally the flesh, blood, and bone of human beings. We're going to have their liver with a nice Chianti and some fava beans." Really. You know, somewhere along the way in my educational process, I probably should have opted for accounting 101 instead of, advanced acting. Because this is again, that whole sort of annoying catch-22 kind of logic that I can't fathom. To wit, Aetna's going to make more money by having less customers and charging the fewer customers they have more money. So what we're going to do is we're going to buy eggs in Malta for 5 cents a piece and sell them in Pianosa for 2.5 cents a piece, and everybody's going to make a profit because everybody has a share. Mother. And see, this is important. This isn't Aetna saying we didn't make a profit. Because if Aetna didn't make a profit, Aetna would have a hard time staying in business. This is Aetna saying they didn't make enough profit. And understand that in the American corporate model, and it's not necessarily the global corporate model, this is a problem that is especially endemic to American corporations. In the American corporate model, there is no such thing as enough profits. There is always another penny to be wrung out of somebody's miserable hide. There's always one more human being who can be turned upside down and shaken by the ankles till the last little bit of walking around change jingles out of their pockets. Because they don't need that money. Corporate America needs that money. I don't have a photograph of CEO Ron Williams. I don't want a photograph of CEO Ron Williams. I just want CEO Ron Williams to drop dead. An analyst, speaking of Aetna's profit problem, said, "They were surprised by an acceleration in medical costs in 2009, which pressured their earnings." That's Josh Raskin, who's an industry analyst for Barclays Capital. He said, "In an effort to get back to a more profitable level, they're raising their prices to match cost trends. When you raise rates, you run the risk of losing your membership. Health insurance is a very competitive marketplace." Competitive indeed. Competitive for profits. Certainly not competitive for services delivered to America's sick, anguished, dying, ill, and miserable class. Williams went on, and he said, "The pricing that we put in place for 2009 turned out not to really be what we needed to achieve the results and margins that we had historically been delivering." Margins. They're more concerned with margins than they are with doing what they set out to, they only set out to make profits. They didn't set out to deliver adequate health care coverage. Never mind. Jesus. And let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Hey, Juanita.
I might talk a little bit about health care and also about the conference in Denmark. I've been watching a lot of the debate, so-called debates.
Yes,
healthcare.
Very important, that phrase, so-called.
Well, it's very difficult, but if anybody watches any of that with an open mind, I mean, they would have to see what liars that the Republicans are. I mean, just blatant liars. But to put this on a personal note, I have, I think I've talked before about, I have had what they call Advantage. I've learned more about it since watching those debates. And I know that one time before I ever got it, they had it in our county before Part D, and they got out because they weren't making enough. We didn't have any kind of anything like that in where I live. And anyway, after Part D came in, then they got back in it. And I got on it for that and all. Well, now, you know how they talk about, you know, everything's going to go up. Well, that's going up. We'll have to pay more for prescriptions, more to go to the doctor. I mean, more co-pays and all like that. And I asked them when I called, because I, you know, the cards is, you get a little idea of what you have. Anyway, I call them and ask them, oh, we didn't make enough money. And I think, aren't they doing kind of what the credit cards have been doing?
It's all the same dodge, Juanita.
Yeah. I mean, the credit cards are really stomping on people. I got to where I don't even look
corporate
at it.
Corporate America is stomping on people.
Of course, yeah.
You know, you see those ads, what's in your wallet? My nightmares are in my wallet.
Me too, especially lately. But anyway, I thought, I did see one, you know, that Coburn, how he's always said, I'm a doctor.
Yeah. We'll do that again.
I'm a doctor. Well, he got up and was saying, any of you here ever taken care of a patient, blah blah this and blah blah that, you know, and go further with it? No, you haven't. He was talking to Carrie mainly, and he kept going. I'm sure you've heard him.
Oh, more than I care. Yes.
Right.
Well, remember, this is the freak who ran on the platform in Oklahoma that there was rampant lesbianism in junior high schools in southern Oklahoma.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what got him into office.
Well.
And that says more about Oklahoma than it says about him.
You know, he's been really just rubbing this in constantly. Well, Carrie got him good. He said, no, I'm not a doctor. They said, you aren't a lawyer either. And you vote, you try to vote on things that affect lawyers. And you vote to go to war, you vote for that. And he said, actually, I do have in my family, one of my daughters is a doctor and other people in my family. And so they are for change and all. So I thought he gave him a good comeback on that. Excuse me.
No, that's okay.
I don't know what happened?
Well, but you can zing the likes of Tom Coburn all you want, but it has no effect because in order to have an effect, there would have to be a conscience involved, and Repiglicans like Tom Coburn have no conscience whatsoever.
I agree. They've got that family deal going on. Boy, that really opened my eyes, knowing about that family.
And, of course, the family was part and parcel of what was going on today in the Senate, Juanita.
Oh, yeah.
And by the way, can I just say that I despise Ben Nelson? Did you hear his pouting after the rejection of his little Stupak amendment?
Did I hear him what afterwards?
His response.
No, what did he say?
They asked him, would he still support the bill, and he said, well, I may, but they're certainly making it difficult. You know, all those nasty women wanting to control their own bodies are just making it too difficult for a guy with a bad rug on his head to support the bill.
Well, those
I swear, every time I see him, I think a little bird's just going to fly out of that rug.
Well, those women, they got him. They gave him what for.
But, you know, Barbara Boxer had a very important question that those wing nuts, and just because you've got a D behind your name doesn't mean you're not a wing nut. You know,
right.
Ben Nelson is a wing nut.
We got a lot of them down here, believe me.
Yeah, she said, why are women being singled out here? It's so unfair. And Debbie Stabenow from Michigan said, let's keep federal policy in place that doesn't allow federal funding for abortion but respects the women of this country. But that wasn't enough for the wing nuts. I don't think anything is enough for the wing nuts. It's like Brian, you know, talking about our fascination with killing people in various forms of execution, you know, and putting people in prison. And maybe Brian hasn't been listening long enough to maybe I haven't mentioned it in a while, but, you know, there's something that undergirds this nation, and it is a punishment fetish, Juanita. And that punishment fetish gets manifested in the way we run our prisons, and it also gets manifested in the way that we think about women's health care in this country. Because there are a bunch of pasty-faced, doughy old white men who, for some reason or another, either resent or are jealous of or some emotion that I'm not fully cognizant of, women just because they're women.
I think a lot of it is a hatred of women.
Yeah, plain old-fashioned misogyny, sure.
Yeah, I do. I really do. Because I've been the subject of quite a bit of that. And I don't know why, but I guess I look like a victim or something. I don't know. You know, hey, we can do what we want to.
Yeah, just kind of walking. You feel like you're walking around with a big cosmic kick me sign on your back?
Yeah. But anyway, I wanted to call about that, and I wanted to thank Ryan. I mean, he really keeps us up with a lot of history and interesting information.
He does indeed. Brian stays informed, and I love hearing from him.
Yeah, and he sounds like a real good, neat guy.
Well, Juanita, I hate to cut it short, but I've got one more call I want to try to get to if it's not already turned into a busy signal.
Say about, you know about Inhofe that's going over to the...
Over to Copenhagen?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He wanted to go when Osama went.
Yeah.
To be there at the same time, but Osama's changed plans.
Obama. Yeah, I do it too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good night.
All right. Take care, Juanita.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Jim Inhofe. Crazier than a sprayed roach, no doubt about it. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, what's up?
This is Bob in Boston.
Hey, how you doing, Bob?
Not bad. I just want to call. This is a fast call.
Okay.
This weekend, I found out that we're going to try to release Medicare to people 55 years old to 64.
Right.
And, you know, at first I thought it was a great thing. And then it hit me. This is another break to the insurance company. Because in what age group do people most use the doctors and hospital services?
Oh, sure, as they get older.
Right. And so, therefore, what's happening is these people are now being transferred over to the government. All right? Now, they're going to make people pay for rates, if they can afford it. But how much are they going to make these rates? Because they're going to be drawing from a pool of sick people. There aren't going to be any people who don't use the system that are paying into it.
That's very true. That's very true, Bob.
So if you want to destroy the Medicare system, there you go.
Unless, of course, you go all the way and do, you know, H.R. 676 style Medicare for all.
Right. And they're not doing that.
And that puts healthy people into the pool and less healthy people into the pool. But you can figure it out, Bob. I can figure it out. The horn, everybody listening to the horn's got it.
Yeah.
But it baffles Ben Nelson.
Right. I mean, what are these? And not only that, but the thing that gets me is they put this out as a tease. They're using the Medicare system as a tease. I mean, how bad could it be?
I hadn't thought of it in that way, but you're absolutely right, Bob.
It's
you are.
It's a tease. They're trying to get all the votes. You know, they're trying to appease the progressives and get them to sign on without a public, you know, auction.
And you know, I've seen that referenced in the reporting about people saying, and I think it was maybe it was Ben Nelson said, well, you know, they're just trying to come up with something they can take back to throw to their left wing base.
Right, and that's exactly what they do. They're throwing us a bone and hoping that you know they'll all sign on. And what's going to end up is one age group is going to get a little bit of something, and the insurance companies are going to make all like banners because they don't have to pay any more for that age group that's gone. So again, the insurance companies, it's a win-win.
And you know, right, well, it's right in line with the business we were talking about with Aetna, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, you make more money by dumping more clients.
That's exactly why I just backed this phone call. Because when you started talking about Aetna, that brought this all to mind.
Golly, Ned.
Yeah, basically, that's all I wanted to say. I mean, was that part there, bringing that idea up, that we're, no matter how we're looking at it, we're getting screwed.
Yeah, sadly.
Yeah.
Poor us. Because, well, you know, I don't know. Maybe we should just strap down every member of the Senate and have them all have an identical tattoo, Bob, of that line from Upton Sinclair, you know, It is very difficult to get a man to understand something when his paycheck depends on him not understanding it.
There's an easier way. The easier way is the election coming up in 2010. So all you got to do is look for three little letters after their name, INC, for incumbent.
Yeah.
Vote for somebody else. Just anybody else. Doesn't matter who. Just vote for somebody else and throw them out, and that'll send them a message.
Is that a little risky, Bob?
Yeah, it is. But at this point here,
I mean, because given the makeup of the Senate right now, what that means in the majority of the country is that you're going to be throwing the bums out in favor of somebody who's even crazy, even more corporate than what they are.
Well, I'll weigh it against what we have already.
I know.
I mean, that's the whole thing. You got to weigh it. We're making it a little bit worse, with the possibility of it getting a lot better. Maybe be worth it.
If we stick to our guns, 6 years later.
Right. Well, actually not 6 years later, because what's the next election? 2012. 2 years later.
Right. Yeah, sure.
All right. So, I mean, we're only talking 2 years here where you can send a message and then fix the message in two more years. So, I mean, I've always been a progressive. I've always voted Democrat. All right. But now I'm starting to really think about it because of the point that these are no longer Democrats.
You know what? I would give anything if Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi could just hear what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
They desperately need to, Bob. But they live in it. They're all bubble people there. You're right. They absolutely are.
If things are going to change, we have to change them. And sometimes things have to get worse before they get better. And sometimes you have to help them get a little worse. And that's the way I look at it. I mean, it's a lousy philosophy.
Well, you know, you're talking about the theory of inoculation, aren't you?
Yep.
You know, where you introduce a little bit of poison to stave a little bit of disease to stave off a whole lot more.
Right.
Well, Bob, good hearing from you. I don't hear from you near enough, but
same here. And yesterday was great. I loved the rally.
Well, thank you so much. It was a heck of a thing to be at, and the reverberations. You know, you provided me that link. To the L.A. Times story. It got around.
Oh, that's good.
And, the next question is, how do we follow up on it? And that discussion is already taking place.
Yep. Plus, it was great in the chat room yesterday with everybody there.
I wish I could have been there, but my band, I didn't want to do anything that would interfere with my bandwidth.
Oh, no, that's fine. I mean, we even without you, we still had a great time.
Oh, well, I absolutely. And, well, I'm just glad. I'm glad everybody tuned in and participated. It was incredibly special, and, you know, there's so much cool tech stuff. If we can just grow a little bit, the stuff we can do is almost beyond. It's almost beyond contemplation.
Yeah.
All right, Bob. Take care. Good hearing from you.
Okay. You too. Take care.
All right. Bye now.
Bye bye.
That's Bob, otherwise known as Lottie, one of the moderators in the chat room. And hey, we're out of time. Sorry to the folks who are on hold. I solicited calls and then didn't get to them all. But you know what? Tomorrow, as Scarlett O'Hara said, is another day, and we'll have another run at it tomorrow evening. Thanks to everybody who helps make this go. Thanks for the purchase that the purchase order that came in for the love of West Virginia, the beautiful print by our dear friend Diane. Thank you very kindly. I have forwarded that on to her, and hopefully it will be toward you sometime in the very near future. There are some left. That's a great way to help us keep the wolf off the door, off the doorstep, and we sincerely need that help. It would be great. It would be wonderful if we could just stop sweating for a little bit and know that we're... Because I'm not kidding. This is not a joke. It's getting harder and harder and harder. You know, usually we say, well, you know, December takes care of January, but we didn't get December taken care of. We really, 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 really do need your help and your support if you're able. If you're able, and if you're not, I do so truly understand. But thanks to you all for your ideas, your calls, your participation in the chat room, your emails, your contributions. Thank you to John Fox, Peter Godbold, and Ben Birch. All of this doesn't happen without everything that they have done and continue to do. If you listened to the rally yesterday, you know the important work of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. You know why I call them the bravest, hardest working people I know. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Howdy. Okay, something funny is going on here. Oh, I think the boy's been in here. I got next to no levels at all on my production audio channel. And normal on my mic channel. Yeah, John, it is all kinds of screwed up. And I don't know who's done what right off the top of my head. Dear God. Oh, this is nice. Hey, everybody. John, not that I can see. Just a minute here. All right, that's weird. What have you done, Ferg? What have you done? What have you done? What have you done? Nope. Okay. Nothing appears out of... I noticed this last night, but I did. I thought it was anomalous. I was listening to Malloy and couldn't hardly get any audio out of his channel. Oh, this is annoying. This is really, really annoying. No. Well, shoot, folks. Let me look at that. I'm sorry to do this to you. I mean, I had a little opening rant all ready to go, and then everything, as usual, went freaking sideways. something muy strange going on. Yeah, John, Mike is normal. It's that stereo channel that's squirreled. And let's just have a look. Ah, there we go. Hey, just for the fun of it, let's check this again. Hold on. Yeah, okay, I think we're fixing. But God only knows why it got that way. Oh, what a... Well, what a way to start a show, but at least at least we're rolling. And we're rolling on this Tuesday, December the 8th. Merciful God. No, they don't deal with this kind of stuff in the real broadcast world, because the real broadcast world has real broadcast money. But, you know, we're not going to start down that road this evening. No. It was what a day yesterday was. Yeah, the PC is no, I don't think it's the PC being noisy. I think it's a connection somewhere bad. It's a bad cord or something, but let's pull that back and get rid of the noise. Yeah. But anyway, we're cooking. We're here. Sorry for the weird start. I didn't have any intention of having a weird start, but, you know, sometimes these things happen. But it is Tuesday. It's December the 8th, 2009. Yesterday, the 7th of December in Charleston, at the headquarters of the West Virginia Department of Environmental Permitting, that's what protection. You're kidding, right? Yeah. No, that's what they call themselves. It was an amazing time. We had a couple of 300 people there, and the coal thugs were kept at bay and at a distance. I have sent the audio over to Ben Birch, who will be getting it posted if he hasn't already. And John Fox has been kind enough to clean up some of the audio. It was, as usual, one of those situations where you don't know what you're getting until the very last minute. Nobody's fault. But we did manage to get on the air, and we did it with a cell phone and a little tiny audio interface and a wire and a netbook computer. How's that for economical, huh? Oh yeah, we squeeze every last penny here until Abraham Lincoln screams bloody murder. That's probably not very tasteful when you're talking about Abraham Lincoln, but whatever, you know what I mean. And the beautiful part of it was the extended response that we had via the Horn family, and folks Facebooking and tweeting information all over. Apparently, the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection was absolutely slammed with your phone calls, and I thank you very kindly for them. It made it so much bigger than it already was. Yeah. And so, I don't know what's next. We're going to try to keep the pressure up. You can always keep the pressure up by persisting in calling the WVDEP. They're easy to find on the Internet. WVDEP.org, I believe, is the web address, and there's a phone number there. And go get them. But, of course, Copenhagen has begun the climate conference.